This is the Quality News Network. Al Jazeera Television today airing portions of the latest audio tape reportedly of Al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden. In the tape, a voice that resembles that of bin Laden urging European nations to pull their support for U.S. forces in Afghanistan. Martial law in Pakistan will be lifted next month as ordered by President Pervez Musharraf. He was sworn in today for his third term. It is the first time he'll serve as a civilian after resigning his post as Army Chief yesterday. National elections will take place on January 8th. Emergency rule will be lifted on December 16th. Meantime, 11 Pakistani civilians were killed after government troops shelled suspected militant positions in northwestern Swat Valley. That's according to the locals who live there. Pakistani army officials say they have no knowledge of civilian deaths, but did admit that artillery was used. Russia and U.S. diplomats are proposing another Middle East peace summit early next year, this time to be held in Moscow. Syria has expressed interest in face-to-face talks with Israel about the Golan Heights. Six more Palestinians killed in Israeli airstrikes. The Gaza bombings have targeted Hamas. In Baghdad, a U.S. soldier on foot patrol killed yesterday by small arms fire. A jump in the price of oil reflected the shutdown of an underground pipeline that supplies one-fifth of all U.S. crude. The pipeline travels between Canada and the Midwest. It caught fire yesterday in Minnesota, killing two workers. In St. Petersburg, Florida, last night, Republican presidential contenders debated face-to-face during a CNN live TV broadcast, also carried online via YouTube. Former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani and former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney squared off over illegal immigration, each accusing the other of using their services. Next month's scheduled TV debate between Democratic presidential challengers canceled because of the Hollywood writers' strike. A failed coup attempt quietly ended today without casualties in the Philippines' capital city of Manila. Police arrested a dozen rebel suspects who took over a luxury hotel there last night. In Sudan, a court has found a British teacher guilty of inciting religious hatred because she let her 7-year-old students name a teddy bear Muhammad. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Right back after this brief message.
Huelhauser talks to customers of First National, South Valley, and San Benito Banks, local members of the network of preferred community banks.
We're here to talk with people about their business banking.
What are you looking for in a business bank?
I think flexibility and reliability and service.
Why did you go to them?
Because they wanted the business, and they earned it by being aggressive and being very responsive to our needs.
Really, this is the first bank that took a genuine interest in me being successful.
So it's a local bank with big bank benefits. And networking.
Exactly. So you go in, they know who you are, but they can give you enough support to be able to do the bigger aspects of things that we're looking at, and they've helped me do that.
Why is a personal touch important to a business account?
Well, I think it goes back to understanding and working hard for your customers, and it's nice to have the backing of a bank that feels the same way.
Above and Beyond Banking from the network of preferred community banks, available locally at First National Bank of Central California, South Valley National Bank, and San Benito Bank.
Former Republican Congressman Henry Hyde has passed away. The 83-year-old Hyde served in the House for 32 years and received the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Hyde was at the forefront of impeachment proceedings against former President Bill Clinton. Footlights coming up on Broadway again tonight. A tentative agreement reached between the Stagehands Union and theater owners, ending a 19-day strike. Quarterly profit at federally insured banks and thrifts plunging to a four-year low. U.S. banking institutions have been forced to take multi-billion dollar charges as a result of home loan defaults. Tebow beat Wall Street expectations by posting a smaller-than-expected quarterly loss of $8.2 million. Company officials say cost-cutting efforts made the difference. Ford Motors reaching a final settlement with a million people in four states who sued, claiming the Ford Explorer SUV was prone to rollovers. The dollar amount of the class action settlement not revealed. Light sweet crude oil currently trading at $91 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. Gold trading at $802.30 an ounce. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 22 points to end at 13,311. NASDAQ up 5 points, the S&P 500 flat. There's always more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. All right, everybody, calm down. Lighten up, Francis. It's Thursday. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. And, you know, Mark Levine, you got to learn not to just walk in and poke the chat room with a sharp stick. Oh, bless his heart. Mark can always get folks fired up over the Israel-Palestine issue. And, you know, it's, I don't have any problem saying it is the single most poisonous issue on planet Earth. Pure, unadulterated, 100% pure poison. Because, you see, it's rooted in, I had the land first. No, I had the land first. No, I had the land first. No, I had it first. My God gave it to me. No, my God gave it to me. My God's better than your God. Yeah. Jesus. You know, the first people to live on that misbegotten, miserable hole in the freaking ground walked on their damn knuckles. Had hair all over their bodies. Danced around monoliths with bones in their hands. Just like 2001 A Space Odyssey. Where are they? Can we just agree that they get it back and then we can stop bloodying up little children and helicopter rocketing apartment buildings and Palestinians with dynamite on their damn waists walking into pizza parlors and blowing up people who stop in for a snack? Damn. Pox on all their houses. All of them. You know, I don't go much in for divine curses or anything, but could it be that if there is such a thing, that area of the world is a manifestation of a great big giant howling divine curse? That the place is You know, I've been doing some reading lately, and, you know, a lot of people, it just goes to show how silly the argument is. A lot of people assume that Arabic and Aramaic and Hebrew, you know, the traditional so-called Semitic languages, that they arose there in that region. Wrong! You know, I remember ninth grade Latin and my wonderful, wonderful teacher, Ms. Bethke, teaching us about Indo-European. Indo-European is the mother language branch of English, Italian, Latin, Greek, Russian, Serbo-Croatian, Hindi. You know, basically from the Indus River to the Atlantic Ocean, that, you know, Indo-European language group. Do you know what the language, mother language group of the so-called Semitic languages is? And that's Hebrew, Arabic, Aramaic. The mother language group is called Nilo-Saharan. Those languages didn't even originate in that part of the world. They originated in North Africa. So, you know, I guess if we're going to give the land to the people who originally owned it, it's somebody who wandered across North Africa and stopped on Mount Hoosis. Oh, it's the holiday season. Mount Crumpet. That's no way to solve a problem. And frankly, what was the phrase that was used on this program the other night? I think Kate mentioned it. Something about problems of the universe in chaos theory being self-correcting. Well, they are. And even the Middle East will be self-correcting. Because in less than 100 years, no matter what Israel does, it will have a majority Arab population. At which point a minority will be ruling a majority. And you'll have something very similar to South Africa was. It is a self-correcting problem. And all we have to do is have the patience to wait. That's part of what being human is. There's a quote from, oh God, I can't remember who. It's at the front of, again, my book reference for the night. I've referred to this a couple of times. Tom Robbins' Still Life with Woodpecker. Be silent and at peace. I'm paraphrasing. Don't even be silent. Don't even be at peace. Just wait. The universe will offer itself and roll at your feet. Something like that. And then there's the other old thing about if you want to... If you sit by the river long enough, the body of your enemy will float by. And there are lessons in that about being at peace, about being patient. Can you imagine thinking that a piece of dirt is more important than the people living on it? I can't. Although I can't imagine it because it infects me too. How many times have I said, by way of discussing the Iraq War, that, you know, if, say, Chinese soldiers invaded West Virginia, how many of us good hillbillies would sit there and take it? Or how many of us would take our hunting rifles and head for the hills? A lot of us would head for the hills. Hey, Mark.
Hello, hello.
Welcome back.
I know I riled a lot of people up in the chat room. I kept hoping someone would call in and take me on directly.
You know, I think it is such a passionate thing that I don't think people want to discuss it, Mark.
That may be true. That may be true. I'm just concerned there's a lot of disinformation out there, and I'm not quite sure why it is. I think it's because listen, you know, the Arab countries have hundreds of billions and trillions of dollars in oil money, and they put a lot of misinformation out there.
Well, they do, and they've got all this money, and they've got a sizable chunk of land, but most of it isn't worth anything.
It is because of oil.
Yeah, but I mean, you can't, you know, I got real head up about the Saudis the other night and beating the hide off of that poor woman. Right. And frankly, you know, I yearn for a day when we can get free of oil and tell them to eat sand.
Well, me too. And I think that when that happens, you will find the Israeli issue will resolve itself. Because if the world, I don't think the Arab countries care about the Palestinians. And I don't think the world cares about the Arabs. They just need the oil. And it's because of that need for the oil that I think you see all the pressure against Israel. I really do. I don't understand why. Israel than Sudan, for example.
Where does Israel's oil come from?
Israel doesn't have any oil.
No.
They used to have they had one oil field in the Sinai, but they gave that back to Egypt.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you a fascinating anecdote about Israel and oil. They're not running their cars on solar power, Mark.
No. They get it from the North Sea, from European countries.
So the Arab world won't even sell them a drop of oil.
No.
Or would Israel even buy it if they could?
Well, of course, I'm sure they would. Israel would love to have relations with the Arab countries. That's one of the things that's interesting in Annapolis is that there was a passionate plea by the Israeli foreign minister. You know, the Arabs wouldn't shake her hand. And I don't think it's because she was a woman. There were male Israeli delegates, too. You know, it's very much a they refuse to accept Israel's existence. I really think it's an existential question. That's why I think that the arguments over the borders are really irrelevant. I mean, we can, you know, argue about this border or that border. But until the Arab mind accepts that Israel exists and will always exist, I don't think the lever will be a solution. But I think a lot of Arabs are starting to come to that conclusion. I think that's one of the reasons why Saudi Arabia was there and Syria was there. And I think Abbas accepts that. And, again, that's why I think that all this...
And it's, the other thing is...
...and all that stuff is a side issue.
The other thing that's heartbreaking for me is this, you know, with very few exceptions, the hell that these people are creating never touched them personally. That's the nature of the, you know, tribal societies and, you know, us hairless apes. It is. It's people in a pizza parlor being blown up by a dispossessed, miserable, hopeless Palestinian with dynamite around his waist. It is, it's a child in a crib in an apartment building in the Gaza who gets an Israeli rocket through its window. You know, those people in that pizza parlor are not participating in this fight. But they are the ones who suffer, and they are the ones who are punished.
Well, that's true.
And that's what makes me sickest of all about it.
There is a difference, though, between people who intentionally try to kill civilians and people who intentionally try to avoid civilians. I do think that a difference has to be made there.
Well, I if you've got the helicopter and you've got the rocket and you know that there are civilians in an apartment building and you fire into it trying to get one person and willingly accepting the deaths of a dozen others, I don't think there's much difference between you and the guy with the dynamite on his way.
I don't think you'll find many examples of Israel doing that.
Mark, my God, man, the factual record is rife with it.
I mean, when you compare, for example, us in Iraq, what we're doing, I think you'll find that our tolerance for civilian death is much higher than Israel's. It does happen, but they really strive very hard to avoid civilian death.
But do you not see that striving to avoid them and still doing them is a hollow victory?
Well, I guess the question is, what do you do when you're being attacked? I mean, if Mexico is raining missiles in the United States, and the missiles were coming from a populated area, what should America do? Let me just give you that hypothetical, all right? You've got missiles being rained on Texas or California from a Mexican-populated area. What should the United States do? Should we invade? Should we fight back? Should we try to take out the missiles? What should we do?
Trying to take out the missiles is a viable alternative, I suppose, if one is committed to the idea that war is the only answer.
Well, no. I mean, if we can negotiate, terrific. That's why I support Annapolis. But, again, I mean...
All that's required for peace is for people to stop fighting. War is not a natural a natural state. It's not an inertial state, or to put it another
actually,
way.
It is in this case. Inertia is not only a stone sitting still. Inertia is also a stone rolling downhill.
That is true.
And unfortunately, these peoples have been rolling downhill for many decades. The inertia at this point is war, I'm sorry to say. It takes a greater effort to stop the war than to continue the war. I'm not saying this with any pleasure. I just think it's the facts on the ground.
And it's also a fact that there are, you know, you talked a lot about India, and God knows Gandhi was killed for his efforts, but you had someone there who was trying to preach a different way.
That's true.
You do not have that in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Everybody is more than happy with war.
That's not true. I think you'll find the majority of the Israeli people and the majority of the Palestinian people would accept a peaceful two-state solution. I think you'll find that extremists on both sides want the war to continue, and the inertia favors the war. And at this point, Israel is in a stronger military position. So if the Palestinians would just say, all right, we'll accept 95%, it would be done. I mean, in Camp David, Yasser Arafat threw away a state. He threw away a state. And it's amazing to me that people will say, I'd rather live in misery. I'd rather live in a...
And he threw that state away on behalf of people who had no say-so.
That's true.
And
Hamas is doing the same thing now. They're not allowing any kind of... in fact, Fatah is too. Neither Hamas nor Fatah are allowing people who disagree with them to say anything in the West Bank or Gaza.
You know, who was
it? The best the Palestinians can hope for is another Arab dictatorship.
Who was the enemy in the King David Hotel when Menachem Begin slaughtered those people?
The British.
Yeah, but they weren't...
It was a British military installation.
But what my point, Mark, is that there were also innocents slaughtered.
And Israel also warned the people to get out.
Because they were going to commit an atrocity.
Well, I don't know why it's an atrocity.
Do you see why people in the chat room get worked up? We can talk about the hellishness of a stupid decision made by Yasser Arafat. You agree? I bring up something that is comparative from the Israeli side, and you go the other way. But people perceive that you state that Israel, you believe that Israel can do no wrong.
Well, that's not true.
When it's clear that Israel, when it's wrong that they've done. You know, Sabra and Shatila?
Yes, that was wrong. I'll grant you that.
But no one was ever tried for it.
Israeli.
Not only was no one tried for it.
Sharon was knocked out of the military. He was.
And rewarded with leadership of the country.
Not till 20 years later. Of course, it
20 years later, he should have still been making big rocks into little rocks in a prison somewhere.
Well, of course, he didn't kill anyone at Sabra and Shatila. He made a tremendous error. His error was to allow the Maronite Christians to run the camp. That was a mistake, a bad mistake, a terrible mistake.
And frankly, if you want to jump for just a second here, one of the problems that I think infects this entire debate is the Arab perception, which is not a wrong one, that the state of Israel exists with the open out in the air complicity of the Christian community, Christian Europe, and Christian United States, and
well,
so it does smell a lot like the Crusades to them.
You know, but why don't the Arab countries let their people know that 55-60% of the Israeli Jewish population comes from the Middle East, that they come from Arab countries, that their languages are Hebrew and Arabic? How come that statistic is never talked about in the American press, on CNN, never talked about in the Arab press? How come people don't recognize that the majority of Israel descends from people from the Middle East? And I'm not talking about thousands of years ago, I'm talking about 50 years ago. How come that's never discussed?
I think it's overshadowed, Mark. I think it's overshadowed by the fact that the so-called Christian West is so heavily invested in it, and that we seem invested in it for an improper purpose.
I think a lot of that's new. I think if you look at, for example, fundamentalist Christian, you will see that most of that strong support for Israel is fairly recent.
Mark.
No, there were some who supported.
Who are you talking to, Mark? I grew up and cut my teeth in the basement of the Baptist Church and I will bless those who bless you, and we must stand up for Israel. And I'm talking 1966, buddy.
Okay, well, that's interesting.
And that's, you know, the Deep South. There's nothing new in that.
The U.S. foreign policy was very much opposed. Truman really went against the Arabists in the State Department in recognizing the State of Israel in 1948.
What is fairly new, Mark, is the rise of what I think is a legitimate question, namely, why do I, as an American taxpayer, have to pay for the helicopters and the munitions that go to blow up Palestinian children in their cradles in apartments? Why do I have to do that? Why can't Israel do that on its own?
Well, you know, and why is America paying for Iraq or Egypt or
Amen.
Arabia? Or,
Absolutely.
Or the other things that
Absolutely.
We get money for.
Why do we have to do that?
It started really as...
I mean, we're arming both sides of the conflict and sitting back and giggling. Does nobody over there figure...
We've always done that.
We haven't always done it.
Virtually every war that we fought, unfortunately.
We have. It's not always. There was a time when we weren't so interested in doing that sort of thing. We had to be dragged kicking and screaming into World War I.
That's true. 100 years ago, it was not the case. That's true.
And largely, it's a function of the national security state that arose at the end of the Truman term.
I agree with that, too.
I mean,
it started from the Cold War. That's where it all started. It started with playing geopolitics and fighting the Soviet Union, and Israel was our ally, and Egypt was
Israel was our beachhead on the
That's
Levant
right.
against
That's
some,
right.
What we were terrified would become a communist Middle East.
That's true.
And so, you know, we just play with people's lives like Plato, and it sickens me, Mark. I don't want to engage in any self-aggrandizement, but I think I'm a little bit above that. If people have problems, let people work their problems out.
It's, you know, and I agree, and that's why I support Annapolis, but I think that there is a difference between people who see their very lives at stake. I look at the mother of the child killed by the suicide bomber and the mother of the suicide bomber, and they're in a very different situation from us living peaceful in the United States. It's much more like the Native Americans, frankly, and more like them 100 years ago. Now, at this point, they've been completely dispossessed and have gambling casinos, and that's about all they have. Or the Aborigines in Australia. It's very different, I think, when your existence is at stake. And that's why the people are fine. You know, it's very easy to say everyone get along when we live in a country with a peaceful border with Canada and a peaceful border with Mexico and a country that is huge, massive. You know, I mean, the entire state of Israel is the size of New Jersey. It's a very small territory.
Oh, I know. An Israeli military jet can't get out of first gear, so to speak.
That's right. And, in fact, if Israel does give back the entire West Bank, as I think Olmert is willing to do pretty much, Israel will be 8 to 9 miles wide. I don't believe there's any country on earth that is that small. I mean, maybe, I'm thinking Vatican City, Monaco, but a country...
Liechtenstein.
Threatened. Yeah, but none of those countries or existence is threatened. I'm trying to think of a country under siege that's that small. I can't think of one. Maybe there is one. Maybe East Timor or something.
But it's
a tremendous risk for Israel to take.
I think
they're willing to do it.
I think you do your own argument a disservice when you try to do the historical thing as, the who had it first argument.
Well, my point is that I believe it should be the facts on the ground today. But it's interesting. I think that when I find people don't know the history. I find people in the chat room saying that the majority of Israel is descended from Europeans and Americans. That's just false. If you don't believe me, go to the census, go to the web,
learn the difference
Jews
between Sephardism, Ashkenaz,
and Ashkenazi Jews. Right. I mean, it's just a fact. Now, you know, you can make whatever argument you want, but I fear all the disinformation, and I really think the reason we have the problem we have today is precisely because the Arab states refuse to allow the Palestinian refugees to become part of their societies. You know, there's only one United Nations institution that recognizes the children of refugees as refugees. Every other people on earth that's a refugee are a refugee maybe during their lives. But only the Palestinians, if you have one grandparent or one great-grandparent who is a Palestinian, you get welfare from UNRWA, the United Nations Works and Relief Agency. So you have a lot of people signing up and saying, well, I got one great-grandparent who's a Palestinian. It's a permanent welfare system. And the reason it is because the Arab countries haven't accepted their refugees the way that India did and Pakistan did and Israel did and Germany did. And
is that the future of the human race, Mark? Is it really the... I mean, this depresses me. Because it sounds to me like the future of the human race, for all that the... And granted, we have nothing to crow about, really. For the efforts that the United States has made, for the efforts that South Africa is making toward a fully integrated society, is it the future of the human race to say, you know, we're just going to have to live in a segregated fashion because we simply cannot get along? All you over here, you over there, you over here, and you know, maybe we'll do some trade, but we can't live together.
I think that when people are secure in their boundaries, then they can start coming together as one. I think one of the reasons why Europe is far more peaceful today than Africa or the Middle East is because those boundaries are not straight lines. They were fought over for generations until basically everyone who speaks French is in France, and basically everyone who speaks German is in Germany.
But that's relatively new, because 2,000 years ago, they all spoke Gaulish.
Well, that's true. But the point is that once the people feel secure, and the Italians have a state, and the French have a state, and the Germans have a state, and I think the Kurds should have a state. Once that happens, then you see the Europeans actually coming together and forming a European Union and working across boundaries. Once the Italians are secure that Italian culture is protected and won't be destroyed, and the French are secure, and the Dutch are secure, and the English, and so forth, then actually I think they can get past national boundaries and work together. But when people are insecure, and we see that with the Kurds, the Shia, and the Sunni today in Iraq, when they feel like they might just be tromped on, then I think they're going to fight to the death.
And with every single instance that you've just named, Mark, I go back to my previous assertion. The problems arise not from everyday people. Iraq had perfectly mixed neighborhoods in Baghdad that got along fabulously under Marshal Tito.
That's true.
Serbs got along with the Bosnians, got along with the Croatians, got along with the Herzegovinians, got along with the Kosovars.
True. And the Arabs got along with the Jews in the 70s, interestingly enough. You found Jews going into Arab towns. There was very little terrorism. Most of it was by the PLO, which was outside the entire territories. There were Arab mayors. The Jews were in Arab villages. The Arabs were in Jewish villages. They were all pretty much living as one. That was true, too, prior to the Intifada.
And so who created the problem? The woman baking her daily bread did not create the problem.
That's true.
The leaders created the problem who made money out of it. How much money does the Arafat estate have in Swiss banks?
Oh my God, hundreds of millions of dollars. I don't know, billions. I'm sure it's billions.
Yeah, and Ariel Sharon's estate. He didn't file a bankrupt estate, did he?
No.
Not by a long shot.
No.
You know, so...
But that's no different, really, from any other...
It's no different from kings and princes, or
right,
chiefs,
that's exactly
or...
Right. That's right.
I've just gotten done reading Jared Diamond's Guns, Germs, and Steel, and I am profoundly moved by it. I vacillate back and forth between thinking that we can somehow rise above this, you know, maybe 50,000 years from now, or taking Kurt Vonnegut's view, very dim view, that we are a virus upon the planet that the planet is desperately trying to rid itself of. And you know, when I look at the Middle East, I can't help but coming down on Kurt Vonnegut's side of the argument.
It's a mess, which is why I think that I'm a firm believer that basically every people should have at least one state. Maybe every people doesn't deserve two or three states. It's why I support a Kurdish state, It's why I support a Palestinian state. It's why I support a Jewish state, a French state, a German state. Heck, I support a Basque state. If the people in the people who speak the Basque language and Basque culture want their own state between Spain and France, that's fine by me. I understand people that want
they're Celtic, they're my kin people,
culture. You know, that's fine by me. Now, whether where the boundaries should be, that's where you can have arguments over, and then you work it out. But I think that it's what's strange to me is that
but you get into a problem though, Mark, because when you sit down to those negotiations, and like I mentioned in our little production chat, I just sent you a tune that I play from time to time on this program called "A League of Notions." When you sit down to start drawing boundaries, it's no, not there, there. That's, you know, the next 2 inches on the map. That's our historical homeland, too, damn it, and we'll fight and kill to keep it.
Oh, yeah. Israel and Syria got within 50 meters of agreement in 2000 in Camp David. 50 meters! 50 meters!
Where's the Solomon who splits that baby, you know?
And be done! It's amazing. At Camp David, I was just reading the other day Dennis Ross's account, they got 50 meters apart, which is just ridiculous on both sides. No question about it. I mean,
The Golan Heights is plural. You take some height, and we'll take some height,
and be done with it. Absolutely. But neither did,
and
we are today.
I think
as a lot of people do, there's more of a chance of Israel coming to an agreement with Syria and giving back the Golan Heights, because Syria at least has the power to stop the violence, and that's the fear about Mahmoud Abbas.
Well, Mark,
his side.
You said you wanted callers, and by carrying this over, people started jumping in. Who have I got?
Good.
Hello?
Hello?
Hello. Hey, Juanita.
I'm probably not going to be very popular. But I wonder why people hate Israel so much. You know, those people the Jews didn't have anywhere to go. They didn't have anywhere to go, and that they didn't take this country away from them. It was the only place they were given to go to. Am I wrong?
Well, I agree with you, but most of the chat room, I think, disagrees with you on this.
Well, I hope they'll
call in and state their views on air. I'd love to hear it.
I think a lot of problem over here is the racist people have, you know, because I can understand a lot of people's attitude about it, you know, but some of it is built on racism. I really believe that. Am I wrong?
I think there's an element of that, Juanita, but I don't think it's the majority.
I think
a lot of people see what is happening in Palestine to the Palestinians.
And it's awful. I mean, let me be clear. I think the Palestinians are terribly mistreated. Gaza is very crowded. It's you know, a bunch of people crowded in a land with virtually no natural resources.
I wonder what people want Israel to do. Do they want them to just move and go somewhere else?
Well, they did. They completely left Gaza. And now Gaza's lobbing missiles in
Israel. But I'm talking about move away from Israel. I mean, is that what
people want? Yeah, that's the thing. Well, I don't know where they want the Jews to go. Kill themselves? I don't understand that either.
They've got just horrible people in charge over there. And I do believe that a lot of the people are peace-loving. It's like over here, we don't want this war. And I believe a lot of them over there.
It's an issue of trust. I think actually most Israeli Jews, not all, and most Palestinian Arabs, not all, do believe in a two-state solution. They may disagree over where the boundaries would lie. I think Mahmoud Abbas and Prime Minister Olmert are both sincere people who want to make peace for their peoples. But the problem is that it is inertia. I think that it's easier to make war than peace. And I think people are refusing to compromise. And I hope it does work out. I really do.
Well, I still think a lot of it is racism that...
Racism comes in my mind. It's not so much between Israel and the Palestinians. I understand.
No, I'm talking about here in this view. Country.
Well,
I'm
yeah, exactly. I think the world, country. If you look at the criticism of Israel in world history, you'll see that really there wasn't that much of it until 1973 when the Arabs started the oil boycott and the Europeans needed that oil. And suddenly people who never really watched the Middle East or cared about the Middle East, in fact, many people were cheering for Israel in 1967 for surviving and so forth, when suddenly their economic interests were at stake. Now you find European condemnation of Israel. Now you find all these think tanks coming up with all this misinformation. And it's listen, we are in the Middle East, Iraq, and everywhere else because of oil. I've always believed that. There's all kinds of atrocities going on in Africa right now. Sudan is committing genocide, and we every now and then say, ooh, that's a bad thing, don't do that. They don't do condemnations in the United Nations. You don't see huge amounts of people. A little bit you do, and I'm glad that they do, but out to support the people of Darfur. The reason people concentrate on Israel, I believe, is because there's an economic reason to do so. That doesn't mean that Israel's beyond criticism. I will criticize the Israeli government again and again. But when people say that Israel doesn't have a right to exist, that's where I say, like you say, Juanita, well, where are these people supposed to go? That's where people, I think, go off the map from being legitimately critical of Israel, which is fair, to being anti-Semitic.
And
but
I don't
say
know,
that they don't have a right to exist.
Do you know about the Ethiopian Jews that
certainly
live over there? You know, they're from Africa. They're Africans,
right,
but they were Jewish, and they believed that it was brought to them by the Queen of Sheba. Am I right?
That's exactly right. 50,000 of them were airlifted in Operation Solomon to Israel.
Right, and they just kissed the ground, some of them, when they got over there.
Well, they do. I actually saw them in Israel. I have pictures of the Ethiopian Jewish soldiers who are serving in the Israeli military and are certainly very, very happy to be there. No question about it.
This is kind of like they can't win for losing, you know. I mean, I don't know why I think it's the most hated country sometime on earth.
Juanita, I have to take issue with you because it's not the most hated country. If that was the case, the single most powerful lobbying group in Washington, D.C. would not be AIPAC.
First of all, Bob, I don't think AIPAC is the single most powerful lobbying group.
Sure it is.
In Washington, D.C. No, it's not. The Saudi Arabian embassy is far more powerful and puts far more money into people's pockets than AIPAC does.
Well,
I
think it's around the world, not in the United States. The United States, Americans love Israel, by and all, most of them. It's people outside of America that hate Israel so much, Europeans, and even worse in other countries.
But you just wonder why the little bitty country, you know, I don't know. Hello?
Yeah, we're all here.
No, you're here. I know a lot of people
I was going to say something wasn't popular, but I have to.
Juanita, it's not that it's not popular. It's just that this is, it's not a question with any easy answers. There is an abundance of evil and hatred and vileness and nastiness to go around on both sides. My objection is that the United States seems to be content to foment all of that evil and nastiness on both sides.
I'm not too happy with the United States government, I guess you know.
You know, you can't.
Well, even you, I think, support what they're trying to do at Annapolis. I mean, it may all fail. It probably will fail.
I haven't even mentioned Annapolis on air, Mark, because it's the most pathetic, obscene, transparent dog and pony show that's come out of this administration in a long time. I mean, the video of George Bush having to be led over to the side of the stage away from the podium with, I forget whether it was Olmert or Abbas who had to whisper in his ear, but it came over the mic, we have to get where they can see us shaking hands, dummy. He does a cameo, he spends 120 minutes there, and then he's gone. This was a little gift to Condoleezza Rice. Okay, there was no reality in it.
But they, you know, it's, see, I'm coming at a human point of view. I'm not coming at it from a government, because I believe the government that they have over there now in charge, you know, like warriors or whatever, you know, they're like the right wing. And we have the right wing Christians over here supporting that. And I don't believe in that. I do believe that they started that, you know, the religion and all that we're all came from, you know, the Christians and the Muslims and all, we're all from the Jewish religion. and for that, you know.
Well, Juanita, I gotta tell you, I'm not. I mean, I was raised on the Bible, but my people had their own religion. It was wiped out millennia ago, and this was just imprinted upon us.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
what
because
was
I.
That?
It was whatever those ancient Scots were into.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm,
and the ancient
I'm
English and the
England,
ancient Vikings.
Ancient Scots, you know, and all my background.
Now, there's
background.
A fabulous, there's a wonderful, wonderful book out there called The Bible and the Sword by Barbara Tuchman that sort of catalogs the because you know while countries like France were very, very much into their holy religion. Nobody got in there and identified with Old Testament history quite like the British did. From early ages, British mythology is even sucked up with imagining that somebody sailed, you know, from the Levant all the way to England. But you know, religion was imprinted upon Western Europe. It wasn't,
and a lot of people don't realize that people with the backgrounds like minus English and Scotch and all is there's a lot of superstition in that. My grandmother was full of it. I mean, a lot of people don't know that. They think that all the superstition came from Africa, but that's not true. You know, like.
We've still got a word that we use in this house that we use for no other reason than it's the only word for what the thing is, and it's a Native American word from Eastern you know this region, and it mm-hmm. comes down to us because I've got forebears who are Native American.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So all that stuff, yeah,
well,
all that stuff.
That's what you're talking about. You're not talking about the other part.
Oh yeah, sure I am. I'm talking about the fact that the ancient Romans and then the Roman Catholic hierarchy destroyed whatever my forebears' religion was.
Right, like you were talking about Christmas trees. You know, that's not Christianity. I mean, that's got nothing to do with Christianity. It's more Germanic.
Right. Right.
But,
Juanita, thank you very much. I've got somebody else.
I love you, Bob. And
I know.
If you know where that I'm not trying.
Oh no, no, no! Look,
problems,
we don't. No, this is not the Amen Corner, nor do I ever want it to be.
Yeah, but you know, I just wanted to be. I'm not really explaining myself very well, but I'm.
I think you are, Juanita. I'm very happy with you.
No, Juanita, you are explaining yourself quite well, dear. You feel like that the world is picking on poor little Israel, and a lot of people do feel that way.
I do think the world is picking like poor Israel, not the United States, but
no,
most of the rest of the world.
Yeah, and some people in the United States, but you know that we have had problems with for years. But anyhow, I just. I've studied a lot of religions, and I've been in other religions, and so I do know I'm not, you know, like I'm not narrow-minded about.
Oh no, and
religions.
no one thinks you are, but I do have another caller on the line that I want to get to.
Okay.
All right, take care, Juanita.
Bye bye.
Bye bye. And Gene is with us, our news ninja.
Hey Bob. Hey Mark. How's it going?
It's going okay.
Doing good, Gene. How are you?
We're not happy about me in the chat room right now, but. Talk to us.
Oh well, when it comes to this topic, that's not surprising. No,
no, it's not. But I'm happy to talk about it. I really am. And if someone wants to challenge me, bring it on. But let's talk about it.
Well, you see, what I'm thinking is, and by the way, just to let you know, have you been following the events that are going on in Belgium, Mark? Because they're about ready to dissolve as a country. Actually,
yeah, and that's, by the way, fine with me. I mean, I think it's up to the Belgian people to decide what to do, but I've always, you know, if the Flemish want to state and the French Belgians want to state, I've been to Belgium, and frankly, with the exception of Brussels, I've never understood why it is a single country. Because virtually, except for the capital Brussels, the country is already divided between the Flemish-speaking population and the Walloon French-speaking population, and they don't get along much. And I think they may be happier as two states, but that's up for them to decide.
Yeah. Well, as I recall, it was something to do with preventing another World War One, I think. But anyway, what I was going to say wasn't so much as applies to Israel as more like, is it a natural state? Because I've been actually trying to think this out. Is it a natural state, part of being human, that people need and other to hate?
No, I don't think hate is a natural state.
Well, I don't know. I'm
waiting, Gene, because I may wind up saying that it is, because
well,
because the and the reason I said okay, obviously I'm not waiting now.
Go ahead,
Gene. Every time someone has come along on this planet that we're aware of, who has suggested that hate is not the natural state and that that one should love one's neighbors, we have a nasty habit of killing him.
Yeah.
Socrates comes to mind. Gandhi comes to mind. Martin Luther King comes to mind. One of your boys, Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer, comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
And every one of those had a very distinct message, and it was a radical message, and it was stop hating. And in every single instance, somebody said, we don't want to stop hating. Hate is what we do, and we do it very well. Die, heretic.
It's just funny, because you see, I know that racism has to be taught, and I'm assuming religious bigotry has to be taught, but the impetus to make somebody another and hate them, I'm not sure that
Gene, it's the easiest way to exist. Because as long as you can hate someone else, you don't have to look at yourself and realize that you are the source of your own problems. Mark, you know as well as I do that that example is easily proven in any number of instances. Right-wing talk radio, Republican policy. Look around all over the world, and you can find people who... The Third Reich. We've just violated Godwin's law. Godwin's law. Anytime someone mentions the Third Reich in a discussion like this, the discussion ends.
Oh, okay. As long as you're using it appropriately as a bunch of examples.
Well, look,
your opponent a bunch of Nazis.
The German people following the Treaty of Versailles were destroyed, screwed, blued, and tattooed.
The Treaty of Versailles was tremendously unfair to them.
Right, and somebody comes along and says, it's not your fault. You're good Germans.
Right.
It's the Jews. It's the blah, blah. But the Jews were handy. If Hitler had been honest, he would have said, it's not your fault.
It's the French.
It's the French. It's the British. He would have said, you know, poor Woodrow Wilson. He would have said, it's the Republican Party in the United States' fault. Because they're the ones that stopped the United States' entry into the League of Nations, which could have prevented World War II.
Now, I have one other question, and you kind of alluded this earlier, Bob, that there were people higher up in each society that have a vested interest in keeping people apart. Then do you think we ought to get rid of family inheritance?
Wow. That one comes out of left field, Gene.
Well, I'm a big supporter of the estate tax, but I'm not sure what the relevance
well,
is to...
See, the reason I'm bringing this up is, where do they get their power from? People leave things on...
Why, we came over on the Mayflower, and some of our estate still stems from those wealth, those riches. Yeah, I know what you mean, Gene. No, I do.
As I look at history, I see, unfortunately, and I'm not saying it's a good thing, but
mm-hmm.
throughout the last 10,000 years of recorded history, might has made right. I'm not saying it's a good thing. I'm just saying
mm-hmm.
that's the truth. Peoples were existed in lands, and other peoples conquered them, and other peoples conquered them, and other peoples conquered them. And
mm-hmm.
what I'm saying is, at the end of the day, at some point, it has to stop. You know, you can say, well, the Palestinians are shooting at Israel because Israel shoot the Palestinians because the Palestinians shoot at Israel. And you can go back and it, you know, we could say it all started with the Hebron riots of 1929, or it all started with the whatever it is.
It started with the first Homo habilis who came down out of the tree and cronked the other Homo habilis in the head with a coconut shell. That's when it started.
I'm saying, let's stop the merry-go-round. Wherever we landed, let's just stop it here, all right? Draw a fence between two peoples where they're living, and we're done. You know, you can always argue that this person should have this territory and this one should have that territory. Let's just stop it now.
Well, I guess here's how I'm going to think about it. It needs to be stopped now, Mark, because we can finally, this situation leads us to the place where we can finally do each other all in, and therefore it all stops. And that alternative nobody wants. But it doesn't, if that wasn't the case, there's no reason for it to stop. As long as the Arabs and Israelis are fighting each other, I mean, gosh, both countries have an educated population. If they were in peace, they could probably make a fairly decent country.
Well, to be honest, it's not, the educational ratio is not equal, Gene.
That's true.
Because in Saudi Arabia, and I think I mentioned this a few nights ago, in fact, an American school run by Saudis in the Washington, D.C. area just recently got shut down for this garbage. They start, you know, it starts with the children. It really does.
Yeah.
And what you pour into a child's head at age 3 and 4 sticks to age 84. And it's awfully hard to overcome. So, you know, as long as Arabic textbooks, Arabic primers, you know, fun with the I don't know what Dick and Jane is in Arabic. But anyway, as long as
Mahmoud and Fatima.
Yeah, fun with Mahmoud and Fatima. As long as that says, see Mahmoud kill the Jew.
Right.
Then, the educational divide only makes matters worse. The textbooks are very real. High school textbooks in the Arab world, the Muslim world, that teach the people there, the children there, that they are, in fact, to shun people who are not of Islam.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and this isn't anti-Islam, and this isn't, and my remarks with regard to Israel are not anti-Semitic. Not everybody who ever served Ariel Sharon a cold cup of coffee is an anti-Semite, okay? But the fact of the matter remains that on the Arabic side of the Gulf, the hatred is perpetuated, and it is perpetuated in the name of religion, and the religion has been perverted by a group of people known as in the outside world as the Wahhabists.
Well, I don't disagree with you. The only thing I might say is you would have, especially on this side of the Gulf, that a similar hatred is now being perpetuated by, say, right-wing Christianity. I mean, after all, they're non-believers over there.
They perpetuate anti-Arab, anti-Islamic hatred in a similar vein as anything going on in Saudi Arabia.
Sure. And I see we're getting close to the top of the hour, so I'll let you go.
You know, Mark, everybody watches the clock but me. Thanks, Gene.
All right.
Okay, thanks, see you, Gene.
All right, bye now.
I'm hoping some of the people who are being awfully critical of me in the chat room will call in and tell me why, because they haven't yet. But I'm really encouraging people to do that, because I think we can talk respectfully about these things, and I've talked with Palestinians respectfully about these things. Heck, I'm on the Arabic television network talking about these things. And I just want to make it clear, I support a Palestinian state. I just disagree very strongly with the people who think that Israel shouldn't exist. If you want to argue that Israel's boundaries should be this, that, or the other, you know, I'm willing to discuss that. I think that's a fair point, whether it should be the 1967 lines or somewhere else. That's a fair point to discuss. It's when you start saying Israel shouldn't exist, or there shouldn't be a Jewish state in the region, that's where I say I think that crosses.
Well, then stay on hold through the news, please, Mark, if you don't mind. I tell you what, if you don't mind, we'll get better sound quality if you'll come back. Can you come back in on your production line?
I certainly can.
Okay, and in the meantime, I'm going to play that song I was telling you about to go into the news.
Okay.
I'll play the whole thing. It's just darn good. And we'll do the news, and then we'll come back. And listen, guys, you know, we will... If you want to beat the other side, then we have to sort our own problems out first. Right, Mark?
Fair enough.
So, you know, let us have this discussion. Nobody else is going to let you have this discussion. If you try to argue with a right-winger on this issue, they're going, you're an anti-Semite.
Right.
And God knows you're not going to get 10 or 15 minutes to make your point either. That is the glory of the horn.
That is true.
So, you know, take the opportunity. If it's burning you up, let's hear why, for heaven's sake.
Yeah, call in. Tell us, people in the chat room, those that are... I mean, I know you're criticizing me strongly. Tell us why. Call in. Let's talk about it. Let's be rational about it.
Come, let us reason together. All right, we'll be back. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice, the song I was talking about from Al Stewart's Between the Wars. Listen to the lyrics of this. It's a little history lesson. A League of Nations. I'm sorry, A League of Notions.
With a map of Europe spread out in a hall of a sign. Every single nationality and principality have come for a piece of the pie. I'm sitting in the wreck of Europe with a map of Europe, and the lines and the borders are gone. Gotta do this jigsaw puzzle, it's an awful muddle, but somehow we gotta go on. Lawrence of Arabia is waiting in the wings. He's got some Arab sheikhs and kings, and we're in debt to them somehow. Lawrence of Arabia has got this perfect vision, gonna sell him down the river, there's no time for him now. I think I'm gonna take a piece of Russia and a piece of Germany and give them to Poland again. I'll put together Yugoslavia and Czechoslovakia and hope that is how they'll remain. Then I'll take a bit of Turkey, then a lot of Turkey. This is all quite a heady affair. There's pressure on Iraq to pick up, and there's Churchill's hiccup, and we can't leave it up in the air. Woodrow Wilson waves his 14 points around and says the time to act is now, won't get this opportunity again. Woodrow Wilson has his 14 points, but Clemenceau turns to Lloyd George and says, you know that God himself had only 10. Today I'm carried by a league of notions, by a league of notions I don't think I quite understand. I only know from this commotion there's a chance that we could turn the world in the palm of our hands. I'm carried by a league of notions, by a league of notions I don't think I quite understand. I only know from this commotion there's a chance that we could turn the world in the palm of our hands.
This is the Quality News Network. President Bush is warning Congress to pass legislation funding for the Iraq War before leaving for the holiday. Democrats say no. Pentagon leaders say they'll begin layoffs. The White House warns U.S. troops are being put at risk. Martial law in Pakistan will be lifted next month as ordered by President Pervez Musharraf. He was sworn in today for his third term, the first time he'll serve as a civilian after resigning his post as Army Chief yesterday. Emergency rule will be lifted on December 16th. Al Jazeera Television today airing portions of the latest audio tape, reportedly of Al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden. In the tape, a voice that resembles that of bin Laden urges European nations to pull their support for U.S. forces in Afghanistan. Last night in St. Petersburg, Florida, Republican presidential contenders debated face-to-face during a CNN live TV broadcast, also carried simultaneously online via YouTube. Former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani and former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney squared off over illegal immigration, each accusing the other of using their services. Next month's scheduled TV debate between Democratic presidential challengers has been canceled because of the Hollywood writers' strike. A failed coup attempt quietly ended without casualties in the Philippine capital of Manila. Police arrested a dozen suspected rebels there who took over a luxury hotel. 1,000 police have been dispatched to French suburbs to tamp down youth rioting. Today, the fourth day of civil unrest sparked when two boys were killed during a police chase last weekend. In Sudan, a court has found a British teacher guilty of inciting religious hatred because she let her 7-year-old students name a teddy bear Mohammed. Her sentence is 15 days in prison and deportation. She could have gotten 40 lashes and 6 months in jail. A recent study commissioned by the United Nations and World Bank indicates that mankind is not prepared for a bird flu pandemic. The World Health Organization is worried that the current virus could mutate into a form that makes it highly contagious to humans. And former Republican Congressman Henry Hyde has passed away at the age of 83. You're listening to the Quality News Network, back after this brief message.
Living our lives in a civil fashion is a declaration of intent. It says we are ready to put our better selves forward for the well-being of the community. It's like Rome. You fall in love, you are on your best behavior. The delight in making a loving connection with someone brings out the best in us, naturally. It is natural to acknowledge our fellow human beings with a nod of the head or a smile, to show them the respect we would want them to show us. The more we are civil with strangers and with those who already know us, the healthier a spirit we create for ourselves, for each other, and the surrounding community. George Washington, the founder of a great nation, declared, "Every action done in company ought to be with some sign of respect to those that are present." Civility is essential to community health. For more information, click on the Civility button on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com.
The iconic Christmas tree at Rockefeller Center was officially lit up last night. The 84-foot Norway spruce is brightened with energy-saving bulbs and fueled by solar panels atop Rockefeller Plaza. Hedge fund giant Citadel will pump $2.5 billion into online broker E-Trade to help balance its dwindling coffers. If approved by federal regulators, the deal gives Citadel a 20% share in E-Trade, whose share price has plummeted in recent weeks. Shares of Sears Holdings tumbled 10% after the company reported a 99% plunge in quarterly profit. Company said sales at its flagship Sears and Kmart stores have decreased, and the Chicago company not optimistic about holiday sales. TiVo posting a smaller-than-expected quarterly loss of $8.2 million. Company officials say cost-cutting efforts made the difference, along with a 14% profit surge. Forbes magazine has released its list of America's poorest-performing cars. Topping the 2000 list are the Chrysler Sebring, Jeep Liberty, and three Dodge products, the Nitro, the Caliber, and the Magnum. Light sweet crude oil currently trading at $91 a barrel, gold at $802.30 an ounce. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow up 22 points to end at 13,311, NASDAQ up 5, the S&P 500 flat. And there's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
All right, here we go again. You know, there's nothing like doing live radio and having to repatch in midstream. I've got to get the new computer finished and bring it online, because the one that's running the show right now is just, you know, come on, let's wake up and smell the falafel. It's not going to make it for much longer. I just lost keyboard function and had to pull out a USB keyboard and get it in there so that I could actually type. Because you'd be surprised. You wouldn't think so, but you know, during a talk radio program, typing can the ability to type can actually come in handy from time to time. As you know, we have been continuing the discussion that Mark Levine began on his Radio Inside Scoop a couple of hours ago, and the invitation stands. We've heard from Juanita, we have heard from Gene, and I'd like to hear from more of you, as would Mark. This is a tough issue, the Israeli-Palestinian issue. The question... The question of how we deal with these problems is among, it is the knotty question of our age. Not naughty, N-A-U-G-H-T-Y, but naughty, K-N-O-T-T-Y. And, Mark,
I've stirred up quite a hornet's nest here, apparently.
Yeah, you and your little sharp stick, you know, you do this every time you bring this up.
Well, you know, I have my beliefs, and if people disagree, I hope they'll call in and tell me why.
Why couldn't you just start the show this evening by saying, you know, Henry Hyde is dead, good riddance to bad rubbish? I mean, that would have been a nice show topic.
Well, you know, I agree with the audience agrees with me some 80-90% of the time, so where we disagree, that's fine. That's fine. I have no problem with that. I'm doing a show next week on the Second Amendment, and I think people will agree with my description of gun rights in America and the militia and the whole bit. But I do believe what I'm saying. I'm not just trying to stir people up. And
I think
there's a lot of misinformation out there. I really do.
Yeah, you will never tune into a program on this network and hear a host introduce an issue solely for the purpose of trying to engender discord or generate callers.
That's true. I don't do that.
Because it would be, frankly, that kind of conduct, I guess it works well in old-fashioned, worn-out, tired, censored, FCC-regulated buggy whip radio. But the fact of the matter is, there's a vast majority of the audience for these programs that are listening at their leisure. And to sit there and try to build a fire under them when they're listening at a time when they can't call is it's not only patently unfair, but it's disrespectful to that portion of the audience as well. Or so I say.
I agree. I'm just not commenting because I agree.
Okay. but at any rate, if folks do want to call in, I invite them to. Mark...
Here's the part that it is bugging me. All right, let me be very clear, because people are saying, "Well, no, Mark's saying that if you criticize Israel, you're an anti-Semite." I am not saying that. I've never said that. I will criticize the Israeli government. I have done so. I will continue to do so. It's when people resort to hyperbole that I get upset. If people say Israel's acting just like the Nazis, well, that's false. And I believe an anti-Semitic comment. Now, that doesn't mean the person saying it is an anti-Semitic. They may have just tried to say an extreme comment to get under my skin or someone's skin. But obviously, there's a huge difference between rounding up people and putting them in gas chambers and trying to execute all of them, and the things that Israel's done. And we can argue about what Israel's done and whether, you know, they should do the home demolitions or not, and whether they should build the security fence or not, and whether they should have checkpoints or not. And we can discuss all of that, and I'm more than willing to discuss. And some of the things I will criticize. But when you start saying Israel's like the Nazis, you, I think, take yourself out of a legitimate conversation. That's not criticism of Israel. That's demonizing Israel. And that, to me, is frankly, that in itself is similar to the Nazis, where, you know, Jews caused all the problems of Germany. Well, you know, maybe some Jews did cause some problems to Germany. But it's when you sort of demonize an entire country and say it has no right to exist, that, I think, goes beyond the realm of legitimate debate. Again, if you want to criticize Sharon and Sabra and Shatila, I'll agree with you. That was a terrible, terrible thing for him to do, and he may well have realized, I don't know, that the Maronite Christians were going to commit that massacre. But he was condemned for it. Maybe he should have been condemned more strongly for it. That's all legitimate criticism. When you try to compare Israel to the Nazis, I don't know. I guess the only way I could think of it's very hard to compare. It'd be like, I think, comparing black people who commit crimes. Let's say there's a black guy that rapes a woman or something, and calling him just like a slave owner. That to me is worse than the N-word, and it is a racist thing to say. Oh, black people who commit crimes are just like slave owners. Well, no, they're not like slave owners. They don't have a systemic oppression. They don't whip people. They don't lynch people. You know, there is some black-on-black crime. I condemn it. I think it's wrong. There's some black-on-white crime. There's white-on-black crime.
You know, I'm just crazy and liberal, Mark. I condemn crime.
Crime's bad.
I say crime is bad, and I don't even have to get to whether or not people are black, white, or, you know...
Well, that's my point. I just think that kind of rhetoric is the kind of thing that Saudi Arabia puts out.
But the thing is,
it's very dangerous.
I can apply that to this situation as well, though. I don't have to know that someone was Palestinian or Israeli to know that when a mother is weeping, holding the body of her dead son in her arms, I don't have to look and say, gee, did an Israeli do this or did a Palestinian do it, to know that it is evil. And frankly, finding out that it was an Israeli in a uniform doesn't make it any less evil.
The question for me, Bob, is when is there a legitimate right of self-defense? And I think it's a fair question. In the law of war, in international law, when a country is attacked, it is allowed to respond. It's the reason why I, unlike some, but most, like most Americans, I supported our war in Afghanistan. Now, maybe a lot of people didn't, because Al-Qaeda came and killed 3,000 Americans. And we can go into the reasons why that happened and our arming Osama bin Laden in the 90s. But there's absolutely no doubt
that Al-Qaeda was an official functioning arm of the Afghanistan government.
That's exactly right.
Which
they
it wasn't.
The Taliban. Which is why I supported the war in Afghanistan. I strongly did not support the war in Iraq. We were not attacked by Saddam Hussein. It was us that was the aggressor. But I think there's an important difference there, because there are some people who would say that when you're attacked, the right thing to do is, I don't know, maybe it's the Christian thing, turn the other cheek. If someone strikes you, you know, let them strike the other cheek. And I don't believe in that. I don't believe in pacifism. Now, I understand how nonviolence, a la Gandhi or Martin Luther King, can work in a democratic society. I think one of the reasons why Gandhi and Martin Luther King succeeded is because India and Britain and the United States, as awful as they were mainly democratic countries who saw the horrible oppression of, you know, children in Selma or of the Indian people under Gandhi and felt sorry for the population and turned around. I don't think nonviolence works as well when you're confronting a dictatorship. And the clearest example of that I can think of is the poor Tibetans, who were completely nonviolent, completely pacifist, and China went in and took over their country. So I do think countries have a right to self-defense. It is in the law of war. And obviously when that happens, you have to try to not kill civilians, to hit military targets. Every country should strive to do that. But I think that it's not the same when people are defending themselves, a la us in Afghanistan, and when people are attacking another country that never attacked us, a la Iraq. And so I put the same logic into the Israeli-Palestinian situation.
Better be careful how you keep saying Allah. Somebody might want to take a shot at you, Mark.
They may anyway.
Let's go to the phones and see who we've got here. Hey, who've we got?
Hi there.
Hey, Susan.
Hi, Susan.
I thought I'd toss my two cents in.
Throw three.
Go ahead.
First of all, I strongly support Israel's right to exist. So you can rest assured on that, no problem.
I'm glad to hear that.
And I have always supported their right to exist.
And once you say that to me, any criticism of the Israeli government is valid, as long as it's truthful.
Yeah. However, first of all, and this applies not only to Israel, but it applies also to the Palestinians, to the Lebanese, to all of the countries in the region. You are never going to get a viable peace treaty until you stop killing each other's babies.
and mothers and fathers and brothers, sisters, aunts, uncles, and cousins.
I think that's true. I actually think we've seen some recent success in the West Bank, not much success in Gaza, where Hamas is still lobbing missiles and Israel's still responding. But in the West Bank, where you have Mahmoud Abbas, who's corrupt, but not as corrupt as Yasser Arafat, actually reaching out to Israel, you've seen a lot of the violence go down.
Mark, I'm sorry, I have to intervene.
Yeah.
You just poisoned the well.
By saying he was corrupt?
Why is that necessary? Who's corrupt but not as corrupt as Hamas? You know, if we enter into negotiations, we have to. If two parties are going to enter into negotiations, they have to keep some of that stuff off the table.
Okay, that's fair.
I mean, what is there?
Corruption problems too.
Precisely.
He's being investigated by the Israeli courts right now for his own corruption problems. I should be clear about that.
And that's what I'm getting at. No one enters this kind of a debate or this kind of a negotiation with clean hands.
Yeah. The absolute prerequisite is they're gonna have to stop killing each other because these are people that live by the food.
That's true. And you come from a people who live by the food too, so you can spot it when you see it.
Oh yeah. I got ancestors. I got people in Scotland, they're still feuding over things they don't even remember why anymore.
I actually think one of the reasons why there's a tiny bit of hope, and I agree it's not a lot of hope, but a tiny bit of hope in Annapolis is precisely because the West Bank and the Gaza have split up with the more radical people in Gaza and the more moderate people in the West Bank. And my hope is that if Olmert can make peace with Abbas and create a Palestinian state on the West Bank, that the people of Gaza will see that lobbing missiles into Israel is not the way to get a state, and will themselves decide that they want to join in a peaceful process. It's hopeful thinking, I admit it.
The people who are doing that, Mark, lobbing missiles from Gaza, are under no misconception that this is any way to win a war.
No.
That's true.
They just want a body count.
They just want to hurt people because they are hurt as well.
That's true.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
I have a great deal of respect for the Reconciliation Commission process that was begun in South Africa. Because it's a matter of cataloging wrongs and then seeking rapprochement and going forward from there. Spain, this far out, Spain finally convened one of those itself with regard to the atrocities of the Spanish Civil War. I wouldn't know that, but I read your RDA of Irony every day over at FinnermanWorks.com.
That's terrific.
It is.
Did you know that it was illegal for Jews to live in Spain until 1975?
Yes. Yes.
It's amazing. Until 1975. Of course, in Switzerland, women couldn't vote until the 1980s, so that's even more recent. Just one canton in Switzerland, not the whole country, but one canton.
But by the same token, not only are the people who are lobbing missiles going to have to stop, but also when Israel goes to war and they see a ceasefire coming, they can't dump huge amounts of cluster bombs.
And, you know, and I agree with you, actually. There was a lot of criticism over the war in Lebanon. It's hard to know what to do. I mean, here you have this international peace force that was told that they were going to, you know, disarm Hamas and protect Israel's border, and Hamas is now rearmed to the teeth just as much as it was before. That's why Olmert has, I think, a 3% approval rating in Israel, with a plus or minus 5%, which means that maybe it's negative 2. Most Israelis are very angry at the conduct of Israel in the war in Lebanon. And yet, I'm not sure what the right answer is. I think they're angry because it didn't succeed. But when you're being attacked, what should a country do? Should they ignore the attacks? And if so, how do you respond? I don't think there's an easy answer to that question.
Well, responding is one thing. But when you are clearly winning, when a ceasefire is coming, and when you deliberately dump huge amounts of cluster bombs, knowing that they're going to hit Spain. Oh, come on, Mark. Come on.
No, I'm not defending it. I agree with you.
Wrong.
I think that was wrong.
You know, rocketing apartment.
Going to pay in blood.
It's so hard to know what to do, though. I mean, not the cluster bombs. I don't support that. I mean, I don't know that Israel should have accepted a ceasefire. Maybe that was wrong. Maybe they should have just kept going until they, you know, destroyed Hamas. I don't know. They tried that in
the... Well, the problem was they were losing.
Well, no, they weren't. That's really... That's they weren't losing. They weren't winning as fast as they thought they would. No, that's true.
They just weren't winning quickly. They were losing slowly.
Well, you know, I mean, the whole world was demanding Israel have a ceasefire, and Israel, you know, bowed to extreme world pressure. But why was the world demanding a ceasefire if Israel wasn't, you know, if Israel, the world only demanded
could it
ceasefire
be that the world was demanding?
They never demanded a ceasefire,
Martin,
when the Arabs are winning.
Could it be that the world demanded a ceasefire because it was a horrific attack on a civilian population?
Yeah.
Could that be the reason? Could it not be that
Israel
was winning too well?
Why didn't the world demand that Hamas stop kidnapping Israelis and shooting missiles into Israel? How come that was never condemned?
You do realize that the Israeli soldiers that were so-called kidnapped were across the border, right?
No, they weren't.
Yes, they were.
Bob, they were the Hamas broke through the border. I'll send you an article on that. I'll send everyone in the chat room. I guarantee you they were on Israeli soil when they were kidnapped. That's a fact. I mean, you can argue that, you know, Lebanon has a right to go to Israeli soldiers and attack Israeli soldiers, but they were not on Lebanese soil. Israel completely withdrew from Lebanon, with the possible exception of the Shabbat farms, which we can talk about, which the UN has said doesn't belong to Lebanon, but anyway. But they weren't in the Shabbat farms either.
But do you see what you just did?
About that action was a picture that came out of it. Can you tell me why, how a toddler had anything to do with an Israeli soldier being kidnapped and or captured? What did
absolutely
that toddler
nothing.
Have to do with it?
Absolutely
not.
He
died
nothing.
Anyway.
Well, you know, we have to look at which toddler died. I mean, if the cluster bombs, I'm going to agree with you. I don't think that's the right way to fight a war.
Okay, but if the toddler died because a missile was sent into an apartment complex, that's an okay dead toddler?
No, absolutely
yeah,
not.
It's when,
what I'm saying is that you will find that I don't think Israel intentionally tries to kill toddlers, ever. I don't think there's a single example in Israeli history where Israel has intentionally tried to kill children. I don't think America tries to kill children in Iraq either. I think we've killed a large number, and I think Israel's
but
killed
when,
a large
but
number.
But when your conduct, Mark, you're the lawyer here, when your conduct
right.
is guaranteed to reasonably lead to the outcome that occurs, a reasonable,
it's
prudent person should be held accountable.
It depends, Bob. I always think of the example of you have a gunman, and he's holding his son in front of him, and he's busy and he's gunning down your children. One by one by one. And if you shoot back at the gunman, and you try to shoot at the gunman, you try to miss his own child he's holding in front of him, there's a decent likelihood you're going to accidentally kill his child. But he's busy shooting your children one by one by one. Do you fight back, or do you allow your children? It's an impossible moral question. Do you shoot back at a man who's killing your children when you know that there's a decent chance that you will kill his children?
No. Well, see, I think that's a false premise, Mark, because the way it actually works out is the gunman is holding his own kid in front of him, and you send a cruise missile into the apartment complex where he lives.
Yeah.
Right.
That's what happened in Lebanon.
Well, yeah, but in Lebanon, they were sending missiles into Israeli apartment complexes, right? I mean, they had the whole northern third of the country had to leave the area. In fact, the Lebanese left on their side, and the Israeli civilians left on their side, and the civilians that were left on both sides were risking their lives.
What about the Israeli airstrikes on moving ambulances?
I'd like to see evidence of that, because the only... I know this.
You
want to
see the picture of the burning ambulance?
Well, for example, I did a show a week ago Sunday on the so-called Al-Dura massacre, which is the child hiding behind his father, behind a barrel. I don't know if you've seen that footage. But I really encourage people to go to my website and look at the November 18th show, because the evidence has come out that actually Israel didn't shoot the boy. But I don't want you to take my word for it. I want you to go to the video, look at the shots, and listen to the questions there. I know, and I can show you pictures. I'm sure you've seen them. of the bombs that have been placed in ambulances, right? You know about that, Bob, right?
Yeah.
That the Palestinians regularly place bombs in ambulances and try to send them through checkpoints. So I know that Israel requires people going through checkpoints to come out of the ambulance, roll them on a gurney, and they check the gurney for bombs too, because sometimes that has bombs, and put them in a new ambulance on the Israeli side. And then they take them to an Israeli hospital where the same soldiers who fight the Arabs are trying to heal them. That I know of. I don't know of a single instance where Israel has ever intentionally shot at an ambulance. And so I'd like to see it. I want anyone to provide me with the website, provide me with the images, because I think I can pretty much assure you they've been staged and can probably prove it. So anyone who has anything like that, send it to me at radioinsidescoop.com. I'd like to see it. In the Al-Dura example, they showed there's actually you can see it right there on the web. You see a boy, and he is perfectly fine, and he has this red paint on the top of his forehead, and he's perfectly fine. And then he goes and he lies down, and he starts screaming, and his friends start carrying him. And then you see the newsman for the French television, who's a Palestinian man who takes these pictures, and he's filming him as the boy's writhing in supposed agony, and then goes into an ambulance, and the boy is fine. There are other examples where they will take an ambulance, for example, and they will show you an ambulance, and there's a hole in the top. I can show you one of these with the Red Cross label on it. And you can see that if a missile had hit the ambulance, it would have blown up from the inside. In other words, the ambulance, you can see forensically that if a missile hits an ambulance, it lands inside and it blows up from the inside. Instead, this ambulance was harmed from the outside. There's dents on the outside. I mean, I can. Again, you have to go through each specific example, and these things take time. But
Bob,
there's a lot of propaganda here, and what I fear is a lot of people are believing a lot of lies. Now, if you talk about the cluster bombs,
yes, Susan,
you,
Susan,
that's propaganda.
Susan,
go ahead, Susan.
The ambulance attack you're talking about, I think.
Yes.
In 2006,
mm-hmm.
It's a hoax.
It's a hoax?
It's a hoax.
What do you mean?
I mean, I Googled it, and it's, they started digging into it.
And Israel never attacked the ambulance, right?
It's a hoax.
Yeah, I've seen lots of examples of that, unfortunately.
Well, if it is, then a pox upon the people who perpetrated it.
Yeah.
Truth is the first casualty in war. Who said that, Mark?
I don't remember, but I do know the comment.
Or the first casualty of war is truth.
Yeah.
But that really doesn't change my position insofar as, once again, I maintain my assertion that the people who get slaughtered in these wars are not the people who are the combatants.
Well, both get slaughtered, Bob. Both get slaughtered. I mean, the terrorists do get killed, and yes, lots of innocent people get killed.
Ariel Sharon was killed by an insurgent blood clot flowing through his vascular system. He didn't get
Ariel
killed
Sharon
by his war.
Ariel Sharon died of natural causes, no question about it.
Yasser,
and so did Yasser Arafat.
Yasser Arafat died in his sleep.
Yes, he did.
You know, it's people like those two that make me wish for a real hell, because I want them to be in it. And I want them punished for all eternity for the misery they've caused on this planet.
But I think, actually, Olmert and Abbas are both people of goodwill who are trying to make peace. I really believe both of them are acting in good faith.
But how?
And
how,
I got to give both of them credit
for that. But, Mark, to be honest, that's fine. That's well and good. But as long as the democratically elected representatives are not at the table, who's going to make peace? Hamas was democratically elected. Whether you like them or not, that's the ugly thing about democracy.
Well, but the thing is, Hamas is not allowing another election. I mean, they're like the German. I mean, Hitler was democratically elected through the chancellor who appointed him. Now they allow no opposition in there. So it's hard to know what the people of Gaza would vote for now. Maybe they would still vote for Hamas. I really don't know. We can never know, because they have
the angry
down
and the disaffected. The
angry
and the disaffected tend to vote for the people who reflect their anger and their disaffection.
Sometimes, but sometimes you have what they called in the French Revolution a Thermidorian reaction, which is what occurred in the month of Thermidor, where the French got so tired of the blood running in the streets they actually turned against the revolutionary leaders. And maybe one day that can happen, and that would be nice.
I'm just saying, for every time that any, either side, targets civilians or children or women or whatever, they will pay down the road in blood many times over.
There's Susan, I agree with you. I couldn't agree with you more. But there is a hitch in that. When you say target civilians, you provide a way out for the warmongers. They say, oh, we don't target them. I mean, they just happen to be there and get blown into their molecular constituencies.
I don't care the reason, if it's a civilian or an innocent, and they end up getting blown up into red mist, as Mike Malloy says. They will pay. Doesn't matter why, but they will. The feelings are there, and the payment will be extracted.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I can say with some certainty that all of this really is moot.
Yeah.
Because if the history of the movement of human beings across this planet tells us anything, it tells us that the Israeli situation will be solved one way or the other, and it won't be solved by great statesmen. It won't be solved by a Gandhi who rises from the Palestinian side, which I don't think is going to happen anyway. It'll simply be solved by population dynamics.
Yep.
And poor people breed a lot harder and a lot faster than the well-to-do.
Exactly.
And, Mark, I asked you during your first hour, you know, how will Israel deal with its population demographics? They don't have to, the Arab peoples don't have to fire a single bullet. They'll be a majority in that nation inside of 100 years.
I don't know if that'll happen. Israel's about 80% Jewish now. I think that Israel, if they don't get a solution in the West Bank, may have to unilaterally withdraw just as they did in Gaza. I think in the demographics of Israel proper, and even including the Golan Heights, I don't see that as a real concern. Now, I don't think Israel should keep occupying the West Bank, and I think as soon as, you know, the Palestinians control the people there and stop attacking, you know, Israel would love to get rid of the West Bank, and I think most Israelis would do that. And if they have to unilaterally withdraw, I mean, in essence, that's what the fence is. It's a unilateral withdrawal so that the demographics of Israel remain majority Jewish.
Well,
so I don't see that as a problem. I mean, it's not a good thing. I don't think, the occupation of the West Bank is a good thing at all. And that's why I think the security fence is probably the best. If they can't come to a peace treaty, then they're just going to have to retreat behind fences. I hope they can come to peace treaty.
What a pathetic way to live.
Well, yeah. You know, that's unfortunately how many countries live throughout the world. Behind fences.
Well, at any rate, I'm going to let you two go and let somebody else go.
Well, thanks for exposing the fraud, Susan. I do appreciate it because, you know, we're, first and foremost, we have to be fact-based here.
Bob, I had plans tonight, so I've got to go, but I'm more than willing to discuss this issue in the future with anybody who wants to bring it on. That's fine by me. I don't mind the criticism. I can take it, and I hope people realize that, you know, I'm not just saying stuff, all right? I have things to back it up, and if you have things that you back up what you say, by all means, submit them to me. Let me read them, and I'll take a look at them.
Okay, sounds good, Mark. Bon appetit, by the way. Anything special?
No, nothing real special, but I did make the plans a couple days ago, so I probably should keep them.
All right, sounds good. Take care, Mark Levine.
Thanks, Bob.
Bye now. This is always fun, and it always winds up being on a Thursday somehow or another. Let's see who's on the phone now. Hey, who have I got?
Jim?
Hey, Jim, what's up?
Oh, hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm well.
Greetings to all of you.
Thank you.
There's one thing I would like to point out, and I guess you might think I'm playing the devil's advocate here, but, you know, when it comes to war and people have to resort to war, and I think this has really been the tendency ever since, well, our own American Civil War, and I don't think you can really see war being fall in a nightly fashion. And everybody who is anywhere near where that war is being fought is going to be fair game, regardless of what you might consider the morality or immorality. That's just the nature of the beast. And in my opinion, war should be so terrible that people should really think very, very cautiously before engaging upon it. Because once that thing starts,
it's a beast that's hard to get back into its cage.
And everybody involved, whether they're men, women, children, combatants, non-combatants, and the way people think today, they are going to destroy and they're going to eliminate one or the other's will to resist. And that's just the way it is. It is a horrible thing. It is a horrible undertaking. There is no question about it. But I'm afraid anything goes.
Well, and that's why it's a little bit silly to talk about law of war. That's why it's equally silly to talk about the concept of so-called just war as enunciated by the church. The person that they follow never espoused an idea of a just war. That was a human construct of people who came later. And the fact of the matter is to sit and contemplate human nature and its willingness to engage in warfare on whatever level is to contemplate the very most nasty side of humanity. We are capable of great beauty, and in many instances capable of far greater horror.
Oh, of course. I mean, you know, look at the people who have fought wars on both sides. I mean, you know, look at World War II, for example. You had nations that were capable of great beauty, great accomplishment, unparalleled advances in science, medicine, every endeavor of human learning. But then something happens, and people feel as though they have no other way than to use that thing that Chairman Mao once said, that all power emanates from the power of the gun barrel.
Yeah, from the muzzle of a gun. Yeah.
Exactly. And that is the darker side of our species. And
well, I think back to the bombing of Canterbury. You know, the Germans barbarically bombed Canterbury, a non-military target. So in a frenzy of revenge and retribution, the British and American air commands deliberately looked for a place that in Germany that had no military utility whatsoever, and hence you get the firebombing of Dresden that wound up doing more damage than the Hiroshima bombing did.
Well, you know, here's an interesting thing about that. Hitler had expressly forbidden the bombing of London, because he knew that probably it was going to come back to Berlin. I mean, he understood his British adversaries quite well and had a great deal of respect for Britain. And actually, the first bombs that were dropped on London were dropped by mistake by German bombers that got off course. And that's how that got started. And it was to be ultimately Hitler's undoing. And then, of course, Bomber Harris, the British field marshal in charge of the raids over Germany, decided, well, we're going to give as good as we got. But studies have proven that the bombing of the civilians in Germany did not really appreciably undermine their will to continue fighting.
No.
In other words, Bomber Harris's philosophy to blow everything all to hell, the cities, cathedrals, everything they possibly could, the firebombing of Dresden, all that, it did not really undermine the German resistance to fight. If anything,
no, and what's amazing,
I mean, to even greater
sterner resistance.
Right, and that's when Goebbels in 1933 had that huge meeting in the Sports Palace, and it was called the meeting of Totaler Krieg, of total, do you want total war? And so when you start blowing up cities and things like that, you are really getting into a higher escalation, in which I just wonder if the outcomes are what you desire. Because, as I said before, Bomber Harris's tactics really did not do anything at all to appreciably end that war any more quickly.
And you see, Jim, that's what's so frustrating, because there you sit, filled with historic knowledge of history, filled with not only, and beyond the knowledge of history, a comprehension of what the history means. And you and I, I'm not being desultory or anything. We're nothing special. We're two people talking on a telephone and sharing our conversation with thousands and thousands of people via the internet. But here we are. We don't make six-figure salaries, and we can comprehend this. And yet, in the corridors of power in Washington D.C., something as simple as understanding that bombing a civilian population and attacking a country in general doesn't weaken its resolve, but rather galvanizes it, is completely lost on a bunch of hawks who wander around the halls of the Pentagon telling each other in this sort of feedback loop that if we only start bombing Iran, Iran's discontent and its discontented masses, its people who are unhappy with the government, will suddenly rise up and overturn the mullahs. What a load of hooey, right?
Well, I think that's definitely flawed thinking. And, you know, I've always said this, and I've said this on your show many times, those people who want to go to war and those people who walk the halls of power in Washington, they need to be walking on the sands of the desert, and they need to be there to see exactly what the outcome of their decisions are causing. And they need to realize that even though this war is being fought to a certain conclusion, that it lays within itself the seeds of another, greater, more horrible war later on.
Yeah, it does.
And in other words, I believe that the guy who designed that trench ought to have to fight in it. And if he did, I think he'd think twice about it. But you have a lot of armchair generals and things like that who've never had a shot fired at them in anger, who've never taken a bullet, who've never looked at a human being that's been decimated by a weapon. To them, it's some type of video game or some type of chess. In other words, they're playing just like you would play chess, except, you know, the real pieces across the water are not just being swept off the board. They're being blown off the board. Their lives are being destroyed, and or at least appreciably altered to the point that they're no longer functional human beings. But the nature of war itself is a terrible thing. I mean, Sherman once said when he went to the South, what he had to do was destroy the will of the Confederacy to resist, and that's the reason he did what he did. Now, he did bring that war to a successful conclusion, I think, more quickly in that particular case when he went to the breadbasket of the Confederacy and he burned everything in his path on that 60-mile-wide swath. It was a terrible thing. And, you know, and I'm sort of torn between, and I hope you can see, I guess I have ambivalent feelings about this because of my own background in dealing with this sort of thing. But honest to God, the people who design these wars and who think they're so great and who have all these noble ambitions about their outcomes, if they were to have to go up there and be up there with that grunt or that dog's face or that Marine or that Aaron or that sailor or whatever, and they would have to hear the explosion of these weapons and not just see them on television as if it was some type of game show, if they had to do that, then maybe they would have a second thought before entering into these enterprises.
A little more compassion, perhaps.
Yes, but the thing about it is, it's just like, Bob, it's like if you take a room full of ping pong balls and you put them on mousetraps, and you throw one ping pong ball into that room of mousetraps, you're going to have a chain reaction. you're going to have escalation. It's almost like, you know, when I guess the nuclear reactor starts to work. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Except when you get into a war-type situation, you don't have any cadmium or boron rods you can really bring that thing down. I mean, it's going to have to go until it's one side is completely destroyed and completely eliminated, which is basically the objective of most commanders in military situations, and that is to destroy the enemy's will to resist. That's the way they think. That's the way they're taught. And unfortunately, that is the art of war.
And what this tells me is that what you and I are discussing has been discussed in so-called halls of power, and they breeze right past it, Jim, because they don't care, because the war won't touch them. They'll continue to have their meat and potatoes. They'll drive a nice car, and the check will always clear at the bank.
Well, you know, I remember reading, as a fairly young man, All Quiet on the Western Front, of the old German sergeant Himmelstock. And, you know, after seeing the carnage of that war, and my God, it was something like the world had never seen. They had all these new weapons. They didn't even know how they were going to work. They had these huge cannons, and, you know, they thought each one was going to be in Berlin by nightfall and Paris by nightfall, that type of thing.
Yeah, new war, old tactics.
And then a war of movement degenerated into a war of position. And old Himmelstock said, why can't the people who have planned this war leave us alone and let them go out there and fight it, and the outcome of the war will be decided by whoever wins the individual combat? I mean, if there was any book that I've ever read that was a denunciation of war, it was Maria Remarque's All Quiet on the Western Front.
It's an absolutely beautiful, beautiful book, Jim. And I remember a remark, fictional, but reflected in some realities, in John Sayles' movie Mate One, when one of the young men is asking the union organizer, you know, were you in the war? And he's, of course, talking about World War One, and he says, no. The little kid says, well, why not? Don't you love America? And he looks at him and says, boy, all I seen was workers killing workers. And that's all it ever is, Jim. That's all war ever is people from the common class doing the bloody business of people who are too good to dirty their little hands on the business they want done.
Well, it's always been a rich man's war and a poor man's fight, you know that.
Sure.
And that's but like I say, it's something to be avoided at all costs. But, you know, once it starts, then...
Katie, bar the door.
That's it. And, you know, everybody is fair game, and unfortunately that's just the way it is. And it's a... it's something that's... I've been affected very personally by this stuff, by some of these things, and I can tell you stories that would curl your hair, and I've never done that on this show, and I'm not going to. It's not appropriate.
I understand.
But I can tell you this. Let those senators and let the president, people like that who can sit there behind their desk and they're very sterile environments in which there are no dangers and things. All of this to them are movements on a TV screen or a map or whatever. And basically, they don't even have to count the dead. Somebody's already done there to count for them. And in this case, there's not even our president who will be there to receive the bodies when they come into Delaware or
Arlington or anywhere else.
Right. And, you know, it's just, to them, I don't know, I think they're in a state of total unreality. And the person who hates war the very most is the guy who has to fight it.
For the most part.
Well, as far as...
I mean, I think there are those out there who actually enjoy it.
Well, because if you have war, it means more money. It means fast track for promotion. And that is the way the military operates. The military is a corporation.
And that's what, you know, that's, I think you've touched, Jim, on something that is the very core of why so many of us object to the current occupant of the White House. You mentioned he won't show up to honor the fallen, that he can't be bothered to know the number of the dead. But at its base, there was a time when he had an opportunity to participate in something that he revels in so very much. And he evaded that opportunity.
What?
And wanted nothing to do with it. And actively broke laws to keep from having to even participate in the National Guard. And that's nauseating, Jim.
Well, it is. I mean, even Adolf Hitler could not stand the sight of blood. He would almost faint. Even Himmler would faint when he would go through some of the camps he himself created. And when I saw George Bush jogging with that guy with a prosthesis, I was absolutely floored. I mean, he wanted to have a photo op with this guy who lost, I think, but one, if not both of his legs. And here's this guy in a pair of jogging shorts with metal studs on his, on where his legs were. And there's George Bush, hale and hearty, and physically fit. And yet they're out jogging together, and they're trying to use that as some kind of photo op. I thought to myself, the only thing I can say about that on this program tonight is it was an extremely poor taste.
It was an obscenity, Jim. It was an obscenity. I agree.
Well, that's about all I have to say. I heard Bart Levine talk about the Israeli-Arab situation over there. That's a very, very, very bad situation there, and I don't know how it's going to come out. There are things to be said. A lot of what Mark says is true. It's because, I mean, there have been a lot of things that have been done.
But if we start by trying to sort out the recriminations, you never get to anything approaching peace. You have to start out with a desire for peace and say we'll sort out the evil that was done on both sides at a later date. Right now we have to do the hard work of peace, because peace is hard work. It's a lot harder work than war. It's just not as glamorous.
Well, there's nothing glamorous about war, I can tell you that right now. And anybody tells you there is.
But it's sold to the people in their rocking chairs as glamorous.
Well, it's not at all.
And I would not assert that it is, but it is sold that way, and there's no getting around that.
It's very neatly packaged, exactly. But it's just a... it is such a horrible undertaking that I don't know what it's going to take for humanity to realize that it's so horrible that it's going to have to be outlawed. And I don't think that's ever going to happen.
Well,
now we have all these weapons.
We can, Jim, we can end it, or it can end us.
Well, you know what Einstein once said. He knew how war, he didn't know how World War III would be fought, but he knew how World War IV would be fought, and that would be with sticks and stones.
And I don't think history has done anything but vindicate him so far. Jim, I thank you very much.
All right, sir. Good night. Have a good evening.
You too. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And a phrase that Jim mentioned brought something to mind. We'll close this out and go into the news with a tune from one of my favorite musicians, a gentleman from Portland by the name of John Koontz. Check this out. You're listening to The Horn, America's liberal voice, independent and listener-supported. We'll be right back.
Said it was your duty, yours to fulfill. You joined the peacetime army, it's no longer a drill. Take a look around, if you have any doubts, to free the world from tyranny is what this is about. And they say it's gonna take some time. Every day there's one less of you in line. You are are the sons and daughters of the working class, ordinary people with a monumental task. But the world isn't patient, knowing little of your pain. They hold you to a standard themselves they can't sustain. And at home, the pundits start to spin. Politicians and oilmen cash in. Widows in office cry themselves to sleep at night. Corporations get in line, there's contracts to write. The rich man's war and the poor man's fight. God bless your blood, God bless your sacrifice, God bless the innocents that died in the fight. There's hell on the horizon, a fire on the earth, time to tell the truth. What is this worth? And the children that today are playing games, conscription tomorrow calls their names. Widows and orphans cry themselves to sleep at night. Corporations get in line, there's contracts to write. Widows and orphans cry themselves to sleep at night. Corporations get in line, there's contracts to write. Rich man's war and a poor man's fight. Rich man's war and a poor man's fight.
This is the Quality News Network. President Bush is warning Congress to pass legislation containing more money for the war in Iraq before leaving for the holiday break. Democrats say no. Meantime, Pentagon leaders say they'll begin layoffs. The White House warns that U.S. troops are at risk with a lack of funding. Martial law in Pakistan will be lifted next month as ordered by President Pervez Musharraf. He was sworn in today for his third term. Al Jazeera TV today airing a portion of the latest audio tape, reportedly of Al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden. In the tape, a voice that resembles that of bin Laden urges European nations to pull their support for U.S. forces in Afghanistan. To cut greenhouse gas emissions by the year 2030, Americans won't have to drive less or cut back on lighting their homes. A report from two business groups says just buying more fuel-efficient cars and energy-saving appliances will be enough to cut emissions between one-third and one-half. A jump in the price of oil reflected the shutdown of an underground pipeline that supplies one-fifth of all U.S. crude. The pipeline travels between Canada and the Midwest. It caught fire yesterday in Minnesota, killing two workers. In St. Petersburg, Florida, last night, Republican presidential contenders debated face-to-face during a CNN live TV broadcast, also carried online via YouTube. Former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani and former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney squaring off over illegal immigration, each accusing the other of using the services. In Sudan, a court has found a British teacher guilty of inciting religious hatred because she let her 7-year-old students name a teddy bear Mohammed. Her sentence, 15 days in prison and deportation, she could have gotten 40 lashes and 6 months in jail. A recent study commissioned by the UN and World Bank indicates that mankind is not prepared for a bird flu pandemic. The World Health Organization is worried that the current virus could mutate into a form that makes it highly contagious to humans. Bird flu caused the deaths of 157 people worldwide since 2003 out of 261 cases reported. And former Republican Congressman Henry Hyde has passed away at the age of 83. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
I know your secret. Nobody told me, but I know. Every time your little girl wants you to read her a story and you tell her you're too busy, I know. When your boy needs help with homework and you tell him to ask his mother, I know. Your wife asks you whether the warranty is still good on the broken dishwasher and you tell her you're too tired to look for it, I know. You're very good at keeping the secret, but it does take a lot of effort to keep the charade going. It could be very scary and embarrassing if anyone found out. But I know your secret. You can't read. Neither can 93 million American adults. You're in big company. Instead of running scared, become a hero in your own family. Find a local literacy program at your library. It's free. The day you whisper in your wife's ear, "Honey, I can read," just watch how big her smile is.
This message on literacy has been brought to you as a public service by the Quality News Network. For more information, please contact your local library.
Working the graveyard shift is being linked to cancer, as indicated by a newly released study from the World Health Organization. Researchers say that those who stay up overnight and work under fluorescent lights are most susceptible. Our bodies produce melatonin during nighttime slumber, which is known to suppress the formation of tumors. Quarterly profits at federally insured banks and thrifts have plunged to a four-year low. U.S. banking institutions have been forced to take multi-billion dollar charges as a result of home loan defaults. Home foreclosures have doubled from this time last year. In October alone, more than 50,000 Americans lost their homes. Analysts say they expect the situation to get worse in the first half of next year. Hedge fund giant Citadel will pump $2.5 billion into online broker E-Trade to help balance its dwindling coffers. Ford Motors has reached a final settlement with a million people in four states who sued, claiming the Ford Explorer SUV was prone to rollovers. The dollar amount of the class action settlement not revealed. Light sweet crude oil currently trading at $91 a barrel. Gold trading at $802.30 an ounce. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow up 22 points to end at 13,311. NASDAQ up 5 points. The S&P 500 flat. And there's always more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
All right. For the dear sweet love of everything that's holy, let's please get away from this filthy subject. And by that I mean... Well, I probably stuck my foot in it. Somebody will accuse me of serving a cold cup of coffee to Alan Dershowitz, and then it'll be all over. I got a bunch of stuff in the stack, and we're going to do what's in the stack. And, you know, I'm sure somebody will be upset about that, too. Because it's gotten to the point where, you know, "Oh, Bob, don't talk about that. That's a waste of time. Oh, Bob, that's just wrestling. Oh, Bob, you know, not that subject, not that subject, not that subject. Maybe I'll just whistle." Ooh, somebody's in a vile temper. Yeah, that would be me. I don't mean to just sit here and have dead air. Dead air is poisonous, and I apologize. It's probably the reason I'm not on bad old buggy whip terrestrial radio. But I don't script this program. I know a lot of people who get behind microphones like to have notes, and they like to have an opening rant all nice and written out. I won't do that to you, and I won't do that to me. I might have an idea in my head, but I'm not going to script and sit here and read to you. And I really prefer an organic program, one that sort of... A tale that grows in the telling, if you will. And that this was not on my agenda for tonight, but, you know, I enjoy my conversations with Mark, and I know he burns some of you people up. You people, Jesus, I just did it again. Maybe it's time to play music, and we'll just wait for Peter's show to come on. I know it burns some of you up. It burns me up some of the time. I don't believe in excusing someone just because they're your team. You know, just because you're a fan of the Patriots doesn't mean it's okay that Bill Belichick cheats. And, you know, just because you're a fan of Israel doesn't make the slaughter of Lebanese babies or Palestinian babies okay. It just doesn't. And just because I'm an American does not make the slaughter of Iraqi children okay. And to have the military come back and say, well, you know, it's not like we're trying to. You know, I remember, honest to God, I remember the first day of law school. Torts class. 1L. And I remember the first case that we covered went back to merry old England. And it was a case of two guys who were practicing their sword warfare. And one accidentally lopped something off of the other one. And it was pled before the Court of King's Bench. If I'd been a better law student, I could tell you the name of the case. But the one guy who had done the lopping, we'll call him the lopper, and the victim, we'll call him the loppy, the lopper said, well, I shouldn't have to be punished for this. I didn't mean to. And the loppy said, whether you meant to or not, I'm standing here without an arm. And it's medieval England, and I'm bleeding. Not a good sign. And the ruling that came out of that case is a very simple statement. And it is this. All liability depends on fault. All liability is based on fault. And for some people, that's very hard to get their heads around. All liability is based on fault. Whether you meant to or not is not a part of the inquiry. It's whether it's your fault. So when the Pentagon says, well, you know, we've got some collateral damage in the form of a 9-month pregnant mother living in a mud hut that we accidentally sent a $2 million cruise missile into, it's not our fault. We didn't mean to. I mean, we're not running around looking to blow up pregnant women or nothing. All liability is based on fault. And it is our fault. The Iraq War is our fault. We started it. We meant to start it. It was an intentional act. And something approaching 1 million civilians, at least half of them, women and children, are dead as a result. Millions of refugees, but you saw the happy news last week, didn't you? Oh my God, 7,000 refugees have returned. Whee, it's all better now. No, it isn't. It's our fault. And we owe for it. And we are so screwed. Because this is going to break our economy, our spirit, our moral basis for existence, what we have of it. And we're going to pay and pay and pay and pay. And everybody who does this kind of evil pays. Oh, maybe you won't be forced to surrender. Maybe there won't be anything quite so obvious and ham-fisted as the Treaty of Versailles. But we pay. How many thousands of lives cut short by the stupid, my bad, of Vietnam? The thousands of shattered families. You know, I always go back to that pro-lifer argument. why them aborted babies might have cured cancer. Although now we've apparently diminished expectations with Mike Huckstaby of Arkansas saying that those aborted babies could have been picking our lettuce. But who are we to say what those people who have died in Iraq might have done, our side and theirs? We can't know. We're not Tralfamadorians. There's Kurt Vonnegut again. We can't come unstuck in time. We can only come unstuck in this little bit of temporal amber in which we're stuck. And some of us, just a few of us, look around us and wonder how many dominoes are sent falling by every soldier and every civilian that falls in Iraq. Who's to say that lying in a cradle in the Gaza was a baby who might have grown up to become the Palestinian answer to Gandhi? We can't know because an Israeli helicopter hovered and let loose a missile that was probably manufactured here in the United States with our connivance and killed that baby in its crib. And it has happened time and time and time again. But Colonel John Chivington, in the 19th century, upon launching the Sand Creek Massacre, instructed his American soldiers, his cavalrymen, to kill men, women, and children. Kill them all, he said. Mitts make lice. And there are those who feel the same way about Palestinian people. Palestinians who were Muslim, Palestinians who were Christian, and other sects as well. Mitts make lice. Their lives have no meaning. And a dose of damnation, too, of course, for people who take giant bottle rockets, homemade rockets, that have no guidance systems, and just launch them toward neighborhoods from Gaza. To hell with them, too. We don't have enough prison space on this planet for the people who need to be in them. The Ariel Sharons, the Yasser Arafats, the people who would deliberately make the lives, end the lives, maim the lives of ordinary people going about their ordinary business. Hell's not real enough, and the prisons aren't cruel enough. Let's go to the phones and see who we've got. Hey.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. How about you?
I'm all right. I've been listening to what you've been saying about war and about violence and all of that. To me, it strikes me as I know people don't want to hear it, but that to me is just the side of nature that humanity has to express. People don't want to hear it, but someone has to die somewhere, and it's constantly going to be like that. Pick a target. It's like a dartboard. That's the way it has to be.
Why?
Well, I think because mainly it's out of rage and hate for maybe ourselves, maybe for mortality, maybe for the youth. I think there are a plethora of reasons why. And I think a lot of people don't really look into it. And we just want to say, oh, that person's the most vile bastard in the world. Well, that might be, but he's so distanced away from that and isolated from that. I can see how someone after a hard day would be like, yeah, press the button. You just become numb to everything around you. Which is kind of scary if you think about it.
There's no kind of about it, David. That's terrifying. Yeah. That's cold sweats at 3 a.m., bolt upright out of the bed, horror.
I know.
Killing out of ennui, killing out of boredom. killing out
of... Well, not out of boredom, just out of...
frustration?
Yeah, complete frustration of where they're going, the walls closing in on them. I mean, if you really want to look at it, like, look at the movie The Pink Floyd, The Wall.
Yeah.
Nobody said you had to be a rock star to be that way.
No, the whole point of the thing is that it's not about a rock star.
Yeah.
It's a cultural comment.
Yeah, it's a cultural commentary, right. And my take on it is, again, that we do it to ourselves and we find scapegoats in the military. But again, we're co-signing on the military and everything they do. If you want to look at it as like a, this is the way I was looking at it when I was on the phone thinking about you. We want to walk on the carpet. We don't care what's underneath the carpet. There could be skulls underneath the carpet. As long as that carpet's there to walk on, that's what most of the people care about. That's not knowing. So if you don't tell them there are any skulls there, they'll just walk regardless on that carpet. And I think that's a big problem with not just this country, the entire world. And I don't think there is an answer to it. And I think we will be perpetually at war with ourselves forever. Even when we're at peace, and that's another thing that really grates on me. I believe this to be true, Bob. When people do start to protest in peace, people start getting a hero complex, like they can save the world. It becomes addictive. They say, yeah, what are we going to do next? And we're going to do this and do this and do that. And then after a while, it becomes about them, not about the mission. And that's what happens. Everything crumbles and goes back to, you know, everything completely just dissolves and disintegrates. And that's how a movement ends.
Yeah. David, you do realize that that's a tough damn analysis, right?
I know. And I don't have an answer for, you know, that's one of the reasons why. Here's another reason. I don't care if environmentalists attack me. When I hear constantly Al Gore, and I hear constantly, I have to see this movie, it almost makes me in a way like, why do I have to see this movie? I know what's going on with the world. It's the same thing with Michael Moore or anything, but what I'm saying is, and then when I find out who Al Gore is tied and connected to in terms of corporations, I'm thinking, okay, so if we go that way and we continue to give our allegiance to these corporations, what is the catch? That's the way I always look at everything. What is the catch? Just like if we believe everyone is guilty of doublespeak in politics, what is the catch regarding this? What do they want from us? And that's why I don't go all completely like, give me the live Earth tickets, you know? Because I just believe. I don't. No offense to Al Gore. It's to all those.
No, and frankly, David, as far as that the movie is concerned, you didn't need to see it. I didn't need to see it.
Right.
I'm already in the choir.
I'd rather, to be honest, Bob, I'm waiting for the DVD for the Planet Earth series. I haven't seen that yet. I don't know if you saw.
Yeah, but I mean, you get my point. That movie was for the people. God, oh boy, this is elitist. That movie was the people who are concerned with what color Britney Spears' panties are, or whether they're on at all. That was for the people with the blinders on, walking around thinking that everything's groovy because they don't feel it yet.
Mm.
But then again, you know, knowing you to be you, you'll understand this.
Yeah.
There's a certain element of what you say that reminds me of this, David.
Yeah, Jake, it's Chinatown.
You know?
Yeah.
And Chinatown just happens to be the whole blessed world.
Yeah.
You know, I had such a lovely little show. I mean, I don't script and but I had an idea of where I wanted the show to go tonight. This wasn't it.
Yeah. I understand.
I would just as soon I see no point. I see no point in talking about this issue. Because you know what? The Israelis aren't going to stop slaughtering Palestinians, and the Palestinians aren't going to stop slaughtering Israelis. Because neither of them wants to. That's why, you know, that's why it would have been stupid for me to get on there and go, woo, Annapolis. What a BS dog and pony show that was. What a bunch of howling dishonesty. People coming to Annapolis, Maryland, because it was vanity. It was nothing but vanity, David.
Yeah. You know, Bob, the best thing that I can say to all those people who are, you know, completely discouraged and all of that, I would say that at least you're giving a record right now, a digital record, an archive, your own personal digital hieroglyphics of, yes, we did speak out, and yes, we did say something. And no, there was nothing in our control, our power of what we did, because we didn't manufacture these weapons and they weren't at our fingertips. What do you want us to do? And plus, everyone had families and jobs, and they had to sustain themselves with food and water and communities. I mean, I think people, after a while, they'll understand when the world is completely in an epidemic stage of war and violence and everything. I mean, there really is. I mean, I know a lot of people want to say there's something you can do.
As long as the internet lasts, you're right. As long as the internet holds up, there is a digital record of the fact that I, and many like me, yourself included, sort of said, this ain't ours. We don't own it. We don't have anything to do with it. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I just wanted to mention one other thing. On a lighter note...
Yes?
On a lighter note, I really think, Bob, you would be really just in awe of this show called Darth Marenghi's Dark Place. How can I describe it? It's like a BBC Doctor Who meets Ray Bradbury from 1980. And what they do is they do the production of it's this whole made up imaginary hospital, and they work in this hospital, and there's a guy who plays it, but he's also like an imaginary author, and he narrates the show beginning, and he's like, my name is Darth Marenghi. And you might remember me from such books as Ulster. And he's really full of himself. And he says things, and he says off-the-wall things. And the script is just, oh, my God, Bob, the dialogue is funny. It's like a straight Spinal Tap meets Ray Bradbury, Doctor Who, BBC from the 1980s. I guess BBC Channel,
Someday I'm going to get time, and I'm just going to sit down and enjoy that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think BBC is they canceled it, and I think Adult Swim picked it up. So they show that, I think, every Sunday or something. It's called Darth Marenghi's Dark Place. And if you go to it, and if everyone wants to check it out, you go to adultswim.com and then just go to Darth Marenghi's Dark Place, and they have they're showing the first season right now, which is
online.
Like, the first series, I believe, is how they do in the BBC is they do 6 episodes, so they're showing the first series right now. I think they're like at number 4 or something. So I would check that out. It's called Garth Marenghi's Dark Place.
Garth Marenghi's Dark Place.
Yes, Marenghi. He also has a website. And like I said, Bob, it's totally Spinal Tap. Like, he's totally immersed himself in the world of the worst horror sci-fi writer you can imagine. And he has all these books and all these scripts that he always references. And it's just so off the wall. You just be sitting there like, he didn't say that. And when you see some scenes, you'll be like, oh, God, this is... And like I said, the production... Here's a funny thing. In the credits, it says, like how they have an egomaniac. Here's the credit on everything. It says, themes made up by whistles from Garth Marenghi.
Jesus.
Stuff like that. Or like one of the funny things he says, in 2032, there will finally be, like he said, I know, like in the year 2042, I know there will be female mechanics, but I will not be able to tell if she's capable of doing that job. It's kind of like off the wall, like lines like that.
Maybe, you know, maybe one evening I'll stay up late after we're done with everything, because I usually go to bed about 2. Stay up a little bit later and catch a little bit of it. I could use the break.
Well, you know, Bob, the great thing about Darth Murray's Dark Place is the commercials are taken out of them. They're only 20-minute episodes, and you could probably catch up within, like, 2 or 3 weeks or something.
Well, cool.
So for those people who are really interested in the kind of, like, Spinal Tap-type parodies, and when I say the production values, they really nail it, like, in terms of what 1980 looked. Like, they have the right filters, the right lighting, the right graphic design for the text and the captions and the script and everything. So yeah, I just want.
Oh, for me, it'll be like time travel.
Yeah, it will be. They even have like the Moog synthesizers, with, like the themes and stuff. They really thought about everything in terms of the production values. Oh, and then now they also keep the flubs and the mistakes of like those old types of BBC shows, like you see the strings, you see everything, like how they, but like I said, the way they designed it, it's just so amazing in terms of, like, you would think it was from, like, 1980 or something. And it's funny as all hell, too. I mean, like, they're literally taking the piss out of, like, all of the British typewriters, you know, Clive Barker, all of those the people from the 80s, a little bit from Stephen King, a little bit from Ray Bradbury. It's like a composite, kind of like Spinal Tap. But it's really funny, and it's really politically incorrect, and I do urge people to check it out.
Well, cool. Thanks, David.
Yeah, no problem, Bob. Just thought I'd give something lighter than just
war or whatever. It's been a tough night. It really has. I mean,
hopefully someone else will bring something light to the table. You know, that's another thing, people. You don't have to talk about.
Yeah, at this point, I've had plenty of meat and potatoes tonight. I need a little Jell-O.
We already had prayer meeting Wednesday. that's when you talk about depression, depressing things.
Oh, and I've still got a couple of prayer meeting stories left over too. Let's open up.
Oh, do you? Well, I better let you go then.
All right, talk to you later, David. Bye.
All right,
now.
Later.
Bless David's heart. All right, I gotta go. I gotta go watch that now at Adult Swim. I am a cartoon freak. Moving around just a little bit. I'll tell you what. Let's take a quick break. You know what? Instead of, look, you know the commercials we run. You know I would like for you to go to citynet.net and see if they've got service in your area. And if they do. That you should get their stuff, their service, because they're a great company to do business with. You know that, right? You know I'd like for you to order some jeans or a t-shirt or something from No Sweat, right? Please? And you know that if you've got somebody who needs to go to college, I'd like for you to consider Concord University in Southern West Virginia. You know that, right? Right, okay. So I'm gonna just catch my breath and just play a song for the hell of it. And then we'll come back and I'll find something else to yammer on about. How's that sound? Sound good? Okay, here we go. Nope, can't even do that right. Let's try it again. Let's be really geeky.
Stars fill my dreams. I'm a traveler up
Yeah. We got the ooh, baby, baby part down. You know, that's just my luck. You know, I think I'm going to do a little musical interlude, walk away for a couple of minutes, get a swig off of my caffeine-free Dr. Pepper, and I play a song named after the second most hotly contested piece of earth in the world, Kashmir. Lord God, Billy Bob. I can't win. Let's see who's on the phone. Hey, who've I got?
Hey, Bob, it's Ed.
Hey, Ed, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing?
We're refighting the Israeli-Palestinian conflict tonight, and it's got me in a foul mood.
Well,
one of these nights, I'm going to open the mic up and just tell jokes for 3 hours.
That'd be interesting. I like a good joke. I heard a whole lot of good jokes last night. It was like a bunch of damn monkeys hunting their marbles.
Republican wrestling match?
That's a damn shame. All they need to complete is just throw Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama in with them, and that'll make the whole tour.
Well, that's... It's only going to get more fun. We'll know, let's see, what is it? Ed, we'll know probably by March who the Democratic and Republican nominees are going to be because of the squirrely way we have our primary system set up. And then it's just going to be one-on-one mudslinging until November.
Yeah.
And then on the day after the election, we get to start worrying about the next one 4 years away. I'm going to go live in a cave, Ed.
This, you know, until you stop and realize what is going on and how much they're making of and how far ahead of time that they're making out of this election, it's a continual thing. It never stops. And you listen to this stuff, and I don't like Walt Switzer that much, but after him and Lou Dobbs go off, you've got Sanchez and Nancy the Witch, and Bob, you don't have no news. There's more news. And then you got the beauty queens, the ones that think they're models, that come up. They're not. It's the nearest nothing news that you can. It can't even be called news. It's entertainment, and it's just so disgusting that you can't get straight news. I don't know where to go to get a straight news at. Do you?
I get on the internet and I try to read some of the foreign press, and I try to read news before the newspaper gets to it, before the editors get hold of it or whatever.
Before they butcher it.
Before they butcher it, precisely. All you can do is try to read for yourself and figure out what's straight, because if it's happening on the television, it's not news. I mean, it just isn't. I mean, I like watching Keith Olbermann, or I liked watching him before I lost him on our cable system over here. But I didn't watch it expecting to get any news. I watched it because I liked the way he delivered it, which is a far cry, Ed, from getting information out of things. You know, his guests, the people he interviews, they provide a perspective that you don't get on other programs. And occasionally you'll hear something you haven't heard before, but news doesn't happen on the television. And let me make it clear, it doesn't happen on the local news, it doesn't happen on the state news, it doesn't happen on the three major networks, and it doesn't happen on cable. It just doesn't happen. Because you can't take complicated topics and distill them into 92 seconds and expect to have anything left.
Well, I thought he was going to start straightening up some of it when they got rid of Paul Lazon, and then they brought Sanchez on there. And that arm sling and the idiot, Glenn Beck, I can't believe that they got people like that on there. And those are supposed to be liberal, media.
Yeah. Well, that's what points up what a honking, howling lie the idea of a liberal media are.
Do you ever listen to Keith Olbermann, I believe it is?
Well, yeah, I catch some clips on the internet now. He got taken off of my cable.
Yeah, well, I'm watching him now. I like him as good as
Oh, he's better than anybody else on the TV by far.
Yeah, I like Lou Dobbs, although I'm suspicious of him. And he's changing hundreds of thousands of people to independent, and I don't understand what that's going to do. I know one thing it'll do. It'll only give you one vote, you know.
Well, what Lou Dobbs' game is, Ed, is to make people more terrified of dark-skinned people. That's Lou's only game.
Oh, you mean on immigration?
Yeah. You know, he likes to think of illegal human beings versus legal human beings. Like Dennis Kucinich said a few nights ago, I've never seen an illegal human being.
Yeah. Well, he's my favorite, but he's too far. I mean, he's too far out of the race, I think.
Well, he's a right winger. I mean, he is. He just is.
Yeah, I'm talking about Kucinich.
Oh, Kucinich. Yeah.
I really like him better than any of them.
but I really wonder what his chances, you know, I don't, something dramatic would have to happen before he could win. But our only hope is, what little there is I think is Edwards, may, because if Hillary keeps stumbling and they keep, you know, and the differences they have, and her on this war, she, I don't, you know, something, it's going to be hard. I'd rather vote for, what's his name, Huckleberry or whatever, I can't remember.
Oh, Mike Huckabee?
Huckabee or whatever. I'd rather vote for him than I would Hillary Clinton. And
well, I, see, I got a difference with you there, Ed, because Mike Huckabee is going to get to appoint a bunch of Supreme Court justices, and he would support more. He would be the kind to appoint more Alitos, more Robertses, more Scalias, and that sort. So, you know, I'm at a place where whoever happens to be the Democratic nominee is who I'm going to be voting for in November. Now, I will work my rear end off to try to make sure that it's not Senator Clinton, just because I disagree with her, and I don't much care for Senator Obama either. Of the so-called big three, I'd be much more comfortable with John Edwards, and I think he'd get out there and he'd fight back against a Giuliani or a McCain or any of the other insane bunch.
Well, I am against Obama. When Jesse Jackson came out for Obama, that done it for me, because at one time I'd have voted for Jesse Jackson, but he turned out just to be just exactly like all the rest of them. He is not fair, there's no equality in him. It's all for one race.
Well, no, please understand, with Jesse Jackson, it's all for one person. Well, it's all for Jesse.
Oh, yeah, as long as he can cry on the black shoulders on the African Americans and get their money, that's where he's at.
Yeah.
And I feel that way a certain way about Al Sharpton. That Al Sharpton makes more sense than any of them that has risen lately. So I don't have a lot for either one of them. Though.
Well, it's going to be a tough call for me when first of all, understand, Ed, by the time you and I get a vote, we're both in West Virginia. It ain't going to matter. Because, you know, little South Carolina and little Iowa and little New Hampshire will have already decided the nominee for us.
The way they work that isn't right. I don't know what the answer is, how you do that.
Oh, I think it'd be pretty easy. You set up the primary system by lottery. Every time, every 4 years when the presidential primaries come around, you set up a lottery.
You mean draw numbers for who?
Yeah, for who goes first and who goes second and who goes last.
Well, who sets this up and gets away with it anyway?
It's born. Each state sets its election, and by
and
tradition,
they should be penalized like they did Florida. Take 157 of their votes, and that'll make them think twice before they jump way out there ahead and try to influence the rest of the nation.
Well, the fact of the matter is, you know, it's turning it into a carnival. It's not. This is serious business, and it's not. You know, oh, we want to be first. No, I want to be first. I haven't heard this kind of crap since I got out of first grade, Ed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, you and I think it's serious business, but the rest of them are a bunch of clowns. It's like I said, all of them hustling for the marbles.
It's about the size of it.
It's, I watched that last night, and I thought, what a bunch of clowns. Get a clown suit on.
Yeah.
And like I said, though, about half the Democrats running in there with them, and that'd give them a wider majority of idiots to choose from. Because we don't have very many in the Democrats here. It's hard to draw a demarcation line between Democrats and Republicans, good ones. I'm talking about what they're supposed to stand for. And Hillary Clinton is just a Bush lean-to. That's the way I feel about her. She is nothing more than the old out of the old school.
I don't think I think there's probably. See, I'm very leery of, forgive me, Ed, I'm very leery of something like that, because I remember when people like Ralph Nader said in 2000 that there was no difference between Al Gore and George W. Bush. Well, I knew back then that that wasn't true.
We know better than that.
And I think there's a significant difference between Hillary Clinton and George W. Bush, but some of the things that she does, like taking vast amounts of lobbyist money, and PAC money and things like that, it's very bothersome to me. I want to get away from that system. I want to break that system. I want to destroy that system so it can never pollute our politics again.
Yeah, I don't like the way she backed that governor and 77% of the people against him in New York. I didn't like that at all.
Well, a president doesn't have any power, Ed, over how a state does or does not issue driver's licenses. That was a red herring. That was a question that was put out in that debate specifically to embarrass her, for good or ill.
Well, did a good job.
Did a great job. It was a hatchet job. Yeah. I'm more concerned with her with what I perceive in her to be a notion that she has to be tougher than all the boys to show that it's okay for a woman to lead. You know, voting in favor of George Bush's war, voting in favor of calling the Iranian army a terrorist organization. You know, it sounds like she wants to just perpetuate the war frenzy that has gripped this nation, and I can't support that.
No, and I can't either. But I think most of her ideas would pretty well match up. But I do not like Hillary Clinton, and you know something? I'd have to close my eyes to mark her name on the ballot. And I'm like you, I would, because it beats any Republican, I think. But it's marginal.
Well, it's mainly, for me, it's the Supreme Court. And that's a big, big issue, because Supreme Court justices don't serve for 4 or 8 years. They serve for 48 years.
Yeah. Well.
And we're going to have some long-term balance against the likes of Roberts and Alito, because they're going to be doing their evil for a long, long time.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say that some of the ones in there, it's going to be there a while. I won't live to see them out. And
if I do, I'll be an old, old man.
Yeah. They'll have everything their way, but then if there's enough of them, get in there.
Precisely. And, you know, Scalia is in his 70s. Ruth Bader Ginsburg is... Well, there are no spring chickens on the court except for John Roberts and Sammy Alito.
Yeah.
That means that somebody has to be there to counter them.
Well, what has John Roberts done?
John Roberts? He's just a right-wing tool of the Bush administration.
Yeah, I know what he is. I know when he won. And know... what the battle was, but what is he worth? What has he done?
Oh, he's not worth anything. He's not worth the powder and lead it'd take to send him to the moon.
Yeah. What has his vote done?
Well, he basically...
He's only had one or two votes, ain't he?
Well, no, he's authored some cases, and he's done his damage. You know, he was part of the group that said that Brown versus Board of Education is dead-letter law, you know, that integrated the schools, for heaven's sakes. He knows what his marching orders are very, very well. Ed, we've got to roll on. We're at the end of the show, but it's always good hearing from you, my friend.
Yeah, I'm sorry it took so long. I hadn't noticed the time, Bob.
Oh, don't you worry. It didn't take any time at all. Feels like time just flies.
All right. Well, thank you.
You take care now.
All right, you too.
Bye-bye. All right. Thanks, everybody. You know, and I'm sorry if I got a little petulant along the way. Steady diet of death and damnation just sort of wears me out sometimes. You'll have that. So I'll try to do better tomorrow night, okay? Coming up, the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio host, Peter Godbold, with Strictly Confidential. The horn section we'll have tonight, and hopefully John Fox will be able to go, and I think he's got a new Billy Shears segment for you as well. Thanks to the hardest working man in liberal talk, Ben Birch, at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Many thanks to John Fox coming up, and many thanks to our IT consultant, Peter Godbold. And always, always, always. RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
Thank you.